We are Brightside, home of the
I usually take over Tuesdays. I usually just keep on chatting, but Brett, it's been a while since you've been here. I can't believe it. Brett Bjorkqvist, when was the last time you were on? I think it was April of last year when you had first started.
That may be. Yeah. So I think it was, right? Yeah. So that's probably around the time. So I appreciate you having me on, man. Anytime, I'm always happy to see you, see the following, and chat some home theaters and some other stuff. So
we got lots of stuff to get to. My life's been turned upside down since the last time we chatted. And from what I understand, like, you're doing well, right?
Yeah.
Market maker.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
And that was when you launched, we did a couple of podcasts talking about that. And then, you know, life happens and here we are a year later. How much has that taken off?
So it's been great. So like you said, you know, last year, anytime I think you're starting a business, you know, it's a little slow, right? You got to get those clients coming on. For anybody out there that doesn't know, like DJ said, you know, we talked about this last time. So, you know, I've been about 23 years in consumer electronics. I've spent, you know, again, I've run stores. So I have that, you know, that retail install side where I'm pulling wire, programming systems, then kind of got brought over to the manufacturing side. And I've worked for a variety of products, you know, some we know like Beats by Dre. I've worked for Logitech, bringing out Harmony remotes, mm-hmm. and a little custom install work on that, some video conferencing. I've worked at Bowers and Wilkins. And I've worked at Kaleidoscape, you know, and so, especially in the last kind of two or three, but even all the way back to the beginning, I've always been big about education, right? You know, if you ask me, it was always about educate the client, they'll make their decision. You know, you don't have to push them on stuff. There's such a wide range, as we know, you know, in products that are available out there, and they all sound great at any budget. It's just about what you're ready to spend today and where you can grow to, right? So in my mind, there's nothing wrong with the, you know, the base system that comes in there from Klipsch all the way up to Bowers and Wilkins or other brands. It's all about what sounds right in the room, what you enjoy, right? And so education has always been a big part of that. And so when I stepped out, I had built a couple of training programs, generally for integrators, but then I was always coming on to sites and, you know, chatting about Kaleidoscape and things like that. And so I just had more people asking me like, hey, could you help me out with this? Hey, we want to do marketing. Want to, you know, not salesy stuff, but real content marketing. You know, let's write about our product. Let's talk about why they're great. You know, or let's educate either the consumer or the integrator on how to use the product. And so, so I started Market Maker, and yeah, you know, I've picked up a few different clients. I've worked with guys like Keith Yates on the, you know, upper side of you know, home theater design, and him and Andrew are absolutely great. I started working a few months ago with Anthony Grimani. So again, you know, looking at the design side, you know, a little bit in a different realm, and he's got some great speakers that he's been putting out. You know, he's done 1,000 installs plus, right? So he's done more than 1,000 theaters in his time. It's crazy. And he's been brought in to calibrate all of them, right? You know, Bowers and Wilkins and Triad and, you know, you name the JBL Synthesis, you name the brand. He's calibrated it. And so about 5-6 years ago, he decided to make his own speaker brand, a brand that, you know, was designed to work well, add some technology to the, you know, to the product. So it's not just a speaker. It's using digital amps and DSP controls. So he has the ability to remote calibrate or, you know, calibrate on site. And if something goes down, his systems actually ping. So they ping each speaker every 15 minutes. So he knows probably before you do if something ever. So some really, really trick
that's
stuff.
Cool. Right? Yeah, that's cool.
What I love is like, there's something to talk about. I don't have to just be like, oh, let me market and sell this. It's real technology that in my mind hasn't really, like on the speaker side, we haven't had those things, right? Like IT's that for years. Like the ability to remote dial into a system, that's pretty common nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet, you know, for a lot of people, especially if you're getting help with your theater, they just don't have that ability. You know, they got to bring the guy out. The guy's got to do a truck roll. Ends up costing the client even more money.
Right.
And so it's cool when you start seeing a lot of these brands now that are really focused on, you know, being able to do that remote calibration, which I think can save the, you know, the end user a lot of money and make sure that their system's always running properly. Because I've been in theaters before where people think it sounds right and you go in there and like there's two subs not working or they're, you know, their channel's not running. It's like, you know, you notice your center channel's not working. You know, but if your left side surround isn't working, there's a good chance you don't even know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's happened to me. You just like the kids will bump it over the years. And you, how long was that out before all of a sudden you're watching a movie? It usually takes a movie or something that you know very, very well for like 30 years. And all of a sudden, well, wait a minute. Why don't I hear something? Then you go over and you're like, I've gone behind my speakers and they're pretty much, they're half in the wall, half out of the wall on my side surrounds. And I've like pulled it out and they're just, nothing's connected. That just doesn't, somebody bumped it off and went, like one of the kids had friends. So this was years ago, but it's like, but you're like, hey, you know, and I'm like, who did this? Oh, I don't know. Wasn't me, blah, 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 you know, but, no, but this is fantastic. Do you know, have you heard of Keith Harrison? From Total Home Technologies.
Okay.
Okay. So he does basically every, like what you were just describing with the home integration and stuff. He does everything, you know, home theater and the entire home, $100,000+ systems. And I had him on back in April, I think it was. And he was, it blew me away. The stuff that they can do that now. And he's like, he's got systems like your system will go down, whether it's your house, your theater or whatever. And it just, it, they got automatic backups running. They've got automatic like cell phone systems ready to go in case your internet goes down. And it's like, I got mixed feedback from my listeners. Some people are like, oh, I could never afford that. But then other people, it's just like, I love Dreamland. Love it.
Yes.
I love it. And it's like, I mean, because someday, I mean, you know, Brett, we're getting a little older. Maybe we don't see someday now.
Someday's getting a little shorter.
Yeah. It's like, so I get to, I do joke with that with my son. I'm like, someday you might see this.
That's right. I'm building this for you.
Yeah. I'm like, I know what we experienced 30 years ago compared to today. The good news to me is 30 years ago, we couldn't even envision what we have today. Oh. And so I don't think we can really envision what we're going to be missing.
Sure. Yeah,
no, absolutely. But that's crazy. Down onto a speaker level, they have it now that they can monitor your system. And just, you know, just for Dreamland's sake, what is a system like? What's a 5-1 system cost with that? And I got to imagine you do more than five, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, you can do as many as you want, but running up to the top of that, right?
Right.
So the way he packages it usually starts at, let's say, you know, up to 400 square feet, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, so he'll build packages based on room size because from a, you know, from an actual calibration standpoint, he's trying to hit specific SPLs. He's trying to pressurize the room. All the things that we don't always think about, you know, but are there in the top theaters, right? And so, you're usually starting at about probably 4 grand a speaker, but with the amplifier. So think of it like an active speaker. So you've got
that's actually not too bad.
It's not too bad, right? And they go up to on the XL size, it's pressurized. So if you've had, you know, let's say 3 in the front, and you'd probably go smaller on the sides, obviously, you know, everything's matched. And then you'd have some subwoofers and, you know, so again, obviously it can still go up to, you know, $50,000 and more when you're talking about an Atmos system, right? You know, 2 in the ceiling, you know, 5-1 or 5, you know, dot
7-1.
Yeah. You know, so whatever you're putting in there, multiple subs, things like that to properly pressurize and get a more consistent sound. But yeah, you know, when you look at it, if it's with the amplifier, and you've got DSP controls and you've got all this stuff, now you can buy a less expensive processor because really you just need a processor to decode, right? So And this is doing, you know, this is doing all of the DSP. So really you're just, you're outputting. So as long as you're pre-pro, or, you know, or AVR, if you're using an AVR with pre-outs, as long as it has a pre-out going in, that's all you need. You know, so now you just need a processor that's going to do your proper decoding. But, you know, now your amplifiers are going to work, you know, far better. He's calibrating to the room. The amplifier is designed for the speaker. So it automatically has, so it actually puts two layers of DSP in there. So the first is tuning to the room. And then there's an additional DSP layer that gets laid on after that's for the speaker. So that, again, that room sounds great. And yeah, like I said, it's really, really cool stuff. We were out a little bit ago, you know, doing some listening and at a small little show in Oakland, that we were doing out here, cause that's local to both of us. And, you know, the stuff sounded phenomenal, you know, and again, he's got an acoustics line. So, you know, he knows all the different pieces for it, right? You know, yeah. He knows how to calibrate. He's got the acoustics. He's really there to kind of prep the room. Make sure you're getting the most out of it. And, you know, for the people that do it, they absolutely love it, you know, and to your point, I agree. You know, I tend to be more in that mid range, you know, where I want people to be able to enjoy it. Right. You know, so, yeah. You know, I get that. Obviously I've done the high end stuff and I love that stuff too. And I think, you know, for most people, like you said, some people are going to be like, oh, that's too expensive and this and that. Totally get it. But I think you have to look at these things as aspirational.
Yeah.
If there's real technology behind the product, then it's something you can look at. You can't do it today. That's great. But there's no reason why somebody shouldn't be able to appreciate that. And like you said, it can be a goal for the future. It can be a whatever else. I look at it like cars. I mean, everything has that same kind of perception, right? You know, you know, you can sit there and be like, oh, well, yeah, I'm never going to buy a Porsche. So Porsche sucks. Well, okay. You know, or you can be like, no, I can appreciate that car even from afar. You know, and if I'm able to drive one at some point, then all the better. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's how you have to be able to look at these things. And I think we do that with other things, right? Watches, you know, alcohol, car. You
know, I got more alcohol. You get more watches. You get, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Little peek behind the curtain for the listeners. Brett and I have probably done 3 or 4 podcasts alone, like 3-4 hours each of just us talking about all that different stuff. Cause Brett, you're just like me. Let the listeners know we have a lot in common in that we have other hobbies, and when we go in heavy.
Yes. I need to start finding some cheap hobbies. That's my
I know. Yeah. That, you know, I'm quilting. It takes a while.
But That's right. I just need to learn how to draw. My daughter draws amazing. I'm like,
I can draw.
I can draw. Or on an iPad. Like, sweet. That would be far cheaper than the stuff that I do when I want to go to a track day or I want to, you know.
But that's what I mean. I've known you a couple of years now, and we get along so well because everything you said, that's what my podcast is about. Yeah. It's about the experiences, right? And it's like, there's no right or wrong way. And if you're at a sound bar, the first time you were on, that's what we were talking about. Yeah. We were talking about like, just whatever you have and just work from there, learn, educate yourself. Because nobody else is going to, including me. I can't educate you. All I can do, and I think that's what you preach as well, is like, all I'm trying to show you in is to find out for yourself what you like, what you don't like, what's right, what's wrong. And everybody online can tell you all they want about what's right and wrong. But until you experience it for yourself and you understand and you, what you're seeing, what you're hearing, you won't know. Just like we said, like, we don't know those speakers are out until you hear something that you know, and then you realize there's nothing over there. That's experience. Yeah. There's no magic pill that you can take to go, I know when each speaker is running perfectly. You can't. With this system, you can, because you have a man behind the screen going, oh, his system. And that's fantastic. If you're that, you know, I mean, that's awesome. Yeah. I don't even know if I would want that, but it seems, because I like to fiddle anyways.
Sure.
But when that price point comes down, someday, maybe 10, 15 years from now, and you can do it. Absolutely. That's why I love Dreamland. It's like, oh yeah, I got a self-check system. Everything's running great. I got it on an app. It'd be awesome. It's awesome stuff.
And I think that's the thing, you know, so much technology, no matter what, again, no matter what category we're talking about, starts at the top. You know, realistically, what I always say is that the high-end affluent customer is paying for the R&D, right?
Yeah.
You know, right or wrong, however it works, you know, you pay $100 a year, you know, that again, things are expensive, not necessarily. I think people, again, look, they don't like it because they think that those expensive products that somebody's getting fleeced for, right? You know, like, oh my God, $15,000, $30,000 speakers, like, you know, my $500 speakers sound great. You know, somebody's getting ripped off. And it's like, no, you know, you've got an engineer, you've got, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of products that probably aren't worth it and things like that. But for a lot of times, they're small businesses. You know, this is a small guy, you know, building a product in, you know, in the US, who's engineering product, who's looking at different ways, R&Ding a product for years, spending a ton of time to do this stuff. And that costs money, you know, and I think that's true with a lot of products. You know, Kaleidoscape's another, you know, another one of those products. It is an amazing product. I get where people are like, but it's too expensive. And I hear that. I understand that. And yet at the same time, I'm going to say, but, you know, your Plex has nobody looking at the movies, has nobody double checking to make sure that things are right, doesn't have a Luke and his team going through every movie to make sure that all those pieces are there. That costs millions of dollars a year after the sale. You know, it's like if you shut down tomorrow, you'd still have to support those products. So you have to look at that base cost and then look at how many people are buying it. You know, and people can say, oh, well, if you drop the price, you'd sell more. Yes and no. You know, I mean, that's what every company has to figure out. But I don't think it always has to be, oh, well, now they're just, you know, people are spending too much or they're doing this and that. You're getting a quality piece of technology with people that are passionate about that technology. Just like you, like me, and they're trying to make a business out of it, you know, and it's not a huge business and it's not a this and that. And so you have to realize that those things, when they're being done by hand, cost more than, you know, with the average guy who doesn't, you know, couldn't care less about the audio and video quality, you know, just throwing out, you know, videos. And it's like, oh yeah, I could get this for free. Sure. But you know, the guy's walking in front of the camera, or they're doing this and that.
I have a running theory that I think I mentioned to you a while ago, and it completely based off of just math and business, just the idea. But like everybody, like Kaleidoscape, but like there, it's a great example of, you know, kind of how the math works. And it's like, everybody's like, well, if you cut the cost in half, you could sell twice as many. Well, now you're still making the same amount of money, but you have twice as many clients. And on something like that, you've just upped your demand of what you need to do. Your servers need to be able to meet, you know, you need to, the business has to double, but you haven't doubled your output, your income, I should say. Right.
Yeah.
So your bottom line is still the same, but now your demand is up. So it's a very tricky thing. And it's like, never mind. If you, like, most people are like, well, if you cut it down to like 2,000, which would be like a third of the entry level, you'd have to do three times the people just to make the same amount of money, but now deliver the exact same product. And it's like, it's a fine line between failure and success. And I feel bad, you know?
Yeah. It's like, well, and that's exactly right. Because, you know, you get to that point where, okay, well, now my demand is up, which is great, right? Hmm. Like you said. But now I have to produce more. Now I need a bigger factory. Now I have to hire more people. Now I mean, we're seeing this all the time, and especially right now, you know, so now I have to do all these things. Now I have to up the amount of people that I have in customer support and everything else. So like you said, I may be making the same amount of money, right? Or gross profit that's in there, but now I've got all these additional costs that are in there. And what happens when sales start going down, right? Or we've kind of completed the market now. Do I have to look at laying people off? Now I have to, you know, now I've got all this inventory. Now I've got all these carrying costs. And that's how, like you said, that's how some of these great companies end up failing. You know, we watch, especially in the home theater industry, you know, in high-end custom, we're watching companies, even like Bowers and Wilkins, you know, in 2 years, that company has been bought and sold, you know, two times, you know, it's, you know, and in 5 years or whatever, it's now, you know, it's been three times,
right.
You know, it sold to Sound United and that's great. You know, I love Sound United with it and sold to Massimo and, you know, it's happening because you have to. Macintosh, Stewart, you know, all these brands are getting bought by either somebody else that's a bigger person in the industry that wants that premium brand, which is great because at least they're in the industry, or they're being bought by somebody else in a venture capitalist side, which, again, I can appreciate the fact that they're buying a company that otherwise might have gone out of business. So we can still thank them. You know, I think there has to be an appreciation for that. But now when you're being run by a VC company, is it the same company? You know, are they as passionate, you know, when the head of it isn't the same way, you know, as say the founder, you know, and not thinking about it that same way out of passion. And so, like you said, I think it's a fine line of how big do you grow? What do you do? You know, the enthusiast market, as we know, I mean, I see this all the time with people, you know, isn't streaming good enough? You know, I love my Apple TV. I love my Netflix. I love my Roku. I love my, you know, whatever, right? You know, and whatever app and, you know, HBO and Disney and, you know, they're all getting better. And, you know, again, some people will hate on it and, you know, it's not the same. Audio's not the same. I don't debate any of those pieces. Physical's better, you know, Kaleidos as good or better. You know, I mean, the scientific base of it, like you can tell the differences.
Right. I've had this conversation with people on Twitter, people on the show, and it's only as good as what you can get, right? So you're only as strong as your weakest link. But if you have a system that is weaker than streaming, you would never get the benefit of 4K discs. You'd never get the benefit of a, maybe not even a Blu-ray to really see the benefit between Blu-ray and streaming. And streaming is getting so good now that 95% of probably more than that, right? I usually say like maybe this 5% of the 5% of the population knows anything about home theater. And even into that, there's people with systems that still can't take advantage. They're in home theater, but they can't take advantage of fully pulling out everything in 4K. So when they go to compare a disc to everything's being squelched down to a level of, you know, uniformity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and no, you need that larger system. You need those Barco projectors to really be like, oh, wow, look at that. And the further you get, the bigger you get, just like size and everything. You know, if you blow something up, you're going to see the flaws. Right. Well, it's the same on your system too. The more advanced, the bigger it gets, the more you're going to pull out and be able to hear and see the differences. I don't blame people for saying streaming isn't any better because they don't know. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah,
you know,
and if you're happy watching it, I mean, I always say for people, and again, same thing, I chat with people all over the US, even all over the world, other countries and things like that. So, you know,
me
when
too.
I'm talking, yeah, I know, but that's what I love about this, right? We, you know, it's such a wide demographic. Mm. It's a small niche, but it's but there's so many, right? But there's
I'm pulling in dozens of people from around the world.
I got one on every continent. We're good to go.
Yeah, there you go.
But that's where, you know, I'll talk with people, like, let's say out in the Midwest or, you know, just certain areas, right? Or, you know, they live a little bit more rural. So, you know, they have to buy physical media because they still can't really get high speed. You know, I mean, it's hard. Like I'm sitting in, you know, on the West Coast or on the East Coast and it's like, yeah, I'm getting gigabit. What do I care? Like my streaming is flowing in there, right?
Yeah.
So I can put in 4K, I can do this and that, I can run everything else, and I know I'm still getting the max. That is not
Brett, I had a guy on a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
He didn't get internet to his house till 2019.
Yeah.
2019. And he bought the house. And we had a great conversation about it because a lot of people don't understand that. A lot of people think it's like, why don't they just keep pumping more out? And it's like, streaming's great, but you need to have internet connection. Yeah. And there's a large section of the population. It is all rural. I mean, most of our population is in and around cities, but there is a good amount out there that still don't. He said in his neighborhood, there's still people without it. Like when I say within like a mile or two of him, but when he bought the house in 2011, he didn't know there was internet down the street from him, but they stopped and it wasn't worth to go any further. It took him 8 years
to get the extra. Yeah.
And he's like, he had to go to work with his son's PlayStation, download the stuff, bring it home. Games
to be able to give it back to
him. It was just fascinating to hear about. I've never spoken to anybody like that. And it was it was fascinating to hear, but it's very, very, I mean, it's important to remember, not everybody has everything.
You got it. And that's exactly right. I mean, I know guys even now that are still on satellite, right? You know, imagine paying the same amount of money or more, you know, $150 bucks a month, and you're getting like 2 to 4 megabytes, you know, download speeds. I mean,
That's what he was doing, and it was ridiculous.
And so they're paying a ton, so it's not like they can't afford it. They're building these beautiful theaters, and of course they're using physical media because that's what you have to use. You know, it's you're paying so much more for that internet. You're using it for email, you're using it for work, you're using it for whatever you're using it for. And even if you were using it for streaming, you're not getting enough download. You know, and again, like you said, it's hard for a lot of us to realize that. So there's a ton of ways, just like everything else. I'm like, dude, if you love your streamer, go for it. If you're getting content, that's really what this is about, right? You know, it's about enjoying the content. There's a movie I want to watch. Let's go find it. Let's go watch it. You know, I have 1,400 plus movies on my Kaleidoscape and discs.
Are you up to 1,400 now? And I've on got, the Kaleidoscape, 1,400 on the Kaleidoscape.
I need another probably 40 or 80 terabytes here coming up pretty quick. So.
What do you got now? You got the 80? The 80?
No, I've got a 42. So 42. which is because it's like 2 or 3 years old. So at one point they had a 42 in there. 42 or 40? Maybe it was a 40.
48?
Well, no, it's a 48 now. But I think it used to be it was like a 42.
I'm hoping to get the 48.
Yeah. Mm.
That's what I need.
And that's the thing, right? So, you know, at least you have the capability, and I use it all the time. Like, I probably have 50, 60, maybe 100 movies now that aren't even on my system.
I have the 12.
So that I can put new content on. I'm like,
I have the 12. Oh my God. So you have a 42 and you have movies off. I have a 12. Yeah. I have more movies off than I have on.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just like, and I'm buying all the time. I love it.
Sales come on and this and that. I'm like, okay, you know, hey, John Wick, hey, let's go get it. You know, I mean, it's like, you've got to buy this stuff. And yet, I'm waiting to be able to download it or to do this and that. But, you know, but like you said, it's there. And at least it's easy where in like 2 minutes, I can delete a movie, put on a new movie. And it's not that big of a deal. You know, so it's not who you're trying to look back for the movies that you want. And if you have, you know, in that case, Terra, at least it's only 10 minutes to download, right? So it's really not that, you know, it's not that long if you say, hey, I'm going to watch this tonight. You know, you can pretty easily, you know, a couple keystrokes, you're deleting a couple movies, you add on a couple movies and, you know, grab some popcorn.
I usually try to keep 10 to 15 movie buffer because it'll tell you how many you can 4Ks. And I think the last time I checked, I had like an 18 movie buffer and I was like, oh, okay. But that was also because I took off, what did I take off? I think I took off like Game of Thrones or something, which is huge. Yeah. You know, just one season, you're like, that's like four movies. So you're like, oh, okay, there you go. I'll take that off.
I try to do the same thing when I start looking. I'm like, you don't want to do it like take one off, add one, because then you're going to be doing that all the time.
You know what I wish they would do, though? And a lot of people have mentioned this. I wish you'd still get the tile.
I agree. Again, not really there. I still do some education work for him, but I agree. Everybody's brought it up. I've brought it up.
Because we just want to see it there.
Yeah.
I just have to, and it would be so nice to scroll.
Do something so I know that it's not there. So I have the expectation that 10 minutes to download it, but I should be able to see what's there. And I agree. Right. I hope at some point they added it.
Yeah, I don't even want them to put any gray or anything. I just give me the tile. When I click on it, if it says, 10 minutes to download, be like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
but sure, at least you can scroll. Because right now I just go on my, I mean, you can go on and you see everything there, but I just go on my phone and I'll just scroll through and look to see what I don't have downloaded and be like, oh, yeah, I haven't seen that in a while. Let me throw that on. But it would be nice because that's why I got some movies up there just because I don't want the tile to come down.
Yes.
It's like, I'm like, my
entire... I like the blood. It's got to be in my art.
Yeah.
It is, though. It's like artwork, right? I mean, you it look is. At that page, yeah. And it's like, yeah. I mean, how many times do we see, you know, some home theater of the month or in a magazine or this or that, and seeing that kaleidoscape right on the main screen is usually what you see, right? I mean, that's... Yeah. That's more well known than even the logo, right? You know, is being able to see that tiled screen, and it looks so cool. And you're right. So certain movies, I want that artwork to be up there. And I think it's cool. You know, for what it's worth, Josh, Talo, obviously DJ and I love the product. We need to be able to see our movies that we own. Come on, let's get it done.
Yeah, there you go.
So we'll see how much power we have there, DJ.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but I agree. It's something that gets asked about a lot. I see it in the forums all the time because I'm always there. And you know, and I think it would be a great piece to be able to have. You know? Remind people, hey, on the positive side for them, it reminds people, oh, by the way, I need more storage. Look at all these movies that I can't download.
That I can't,
Or that's... watch, you know, or I have to manage.
Yeah. Right?
So, like I said, it's been great. And you know, we're originally before we went off, we were talking about what I do and everything else. Like I said, you know, I've got Anthony Grimani, who's absolutely great. I still do some education work. So I was chatting with Kaleidoscape the other day. So usually it's more like training. So I, you know, again, I want to make sure that if, you know, one of your listeners, you, I, whoever, if we walk into a dealer, that dealer should know more about the product than we do. Right. They should be able to not just sell it because it's a high end product, but be able to be knowledgeable about it. And I think that's one of the things that we all talk about a lot in the forums, right? Is feeling like, you know, you walk in and you know more and it shouldn't be that way, you know? Yeah. And so that's always been my focus, is how can I help manufacturers to educate their integrators, you know, their dealer partners. So that they preach and talk about things the right way, that they're not just spewing out things that aren't right or this or that because they don't know. Let's educate them. And then at the same time, obviously, like I've always done in the past, you know, jumping on forums and everything else just to be able to help educate people. You know, if they have questions that they know they can call me. Doesn't matter if I work for a company or not. You know, we can talk about lighting control. We can talk about control systems. We can, you know, whatever it is, this is what I've done for 23 years. I love it. And I'm always happy to talk about it because people are spending their hard-earned money, right? Sure. You know, that's the way I look at this. At the end of the day, you're spending your hard-earned money, whether you're spending $1,000 or $100,000. You know, it's easy to go, oh, you just must have money, but it's all still budget. It's all still money.
To a degree, when you get up, when you get up there, there's no, it's not as much of a budget. It's more of a, okay, whatever, but it's, I think when you get higher up, it's, you know, we've all talked about diminishing returns, but it's more about aesthetics. It's about ease of use, right?
Yep.
So you get a lot of integration goes on. A lot of the money goes into the integration, which is, I mean, that's fantastic for the speakers to now be able to integrate that with your system so you can remotely, you know, fine tune it week after week. It's like month after month.
Well, and that's the thing that you see with a lot of these products, you know, or even, you know, products with crossovers into the speaker, they can drift. There's electronics in there. There's, you know, things fail and you don't know. It's so nice to be able to have a product that's constantly updating and changing and tweaking and making sure that it's always right. Right. You know, and I think that's something that if I'm looking, like you said, you know, buying a higher end speaker sometimes becomes a diminishing return, buying a bigger TV or a difference between a technology, this or that. But if I can, getting a better user interface, making it so that my whole family can use that product, making it so, you know, I don't have to hit 50 buttons to be able to do it, and I'm the only one in the house that can use it. Making sure that room gets used more, you know, I'm getting ready. You know, we're just moving in this week and next week into my new place. So, you know, we've been working on it for a while. We were letting my daughter finish out her senior year in her high school. So she just graduated last week. My wife's a teacher, so she had to finish out her school year. She finishes actually today. So we're moving up from where we were to up to an area in Sacramento. And then for me, the idea was this new house allows me to do more demos, to, you know, to build my business out. So I've got an education area. Obviously, I've got this spot I'm still working on, but this lets me, you know, again, as I'm chatting with you and things like that, I kind of, you know, get to have a little bit of fun with it behind the curtain. So behind the curtain, I've got a sound room. And so that allows me when I have to do voiceovers for the trainings that I'm creating, then I've got a room that's relatively soundproof, but, you know, effectively just make, yeah, everything sounds better, kills the echo. I haven't been able to do that here yet. So apologize for any echoes, but, that's the idea, right? It's a working room. It's just a little build out. So it's like 4 foot by 5 foot. But it's got a nice 48 inch Samsung screen in it. It's got microphones. All the walls are getting treated. And so that's there. And then over this way, then I'll have a gaming room. So again, I'll be able to show different technologies. So I'm trying to figure out if I throw a short throw in there, or a larger, OLED so that you can kind of show the differences between them. Probably have just a basic little 5.1 or maybe a small little Atmos 5.2. And then past that, then I've got a small theater. And so I'll have a dedicated theater that'll get built in there. And what I liked with this, now I'd love to have a 20 by 30 room, like some of the rooms I've, you know, worked on in the past or done this or that with. But it's small, but it's the reality of what we have often, right? You know, and so it's only 11 foot wide. And actually it's like 10 foot 10. It's, you know, it's
That's so, like mine. Yeah.
And, but it's 20 feet deep, but the ceiling is barreled because it's peaked. Right. So it's like 6.5 foot to 8 foot. So it's really low ceiling perspective. Yep. But you know, I'm going to actually pull down the walls, you know, and I'm going to treat it properly. And, you know, I have a little bit of space because of the way that the roof is pitched. I have space behind the wall. So rather than building inwards, which is what most people do, right? Maybe your speakers go on the wall, you know, or maybe a half and half, like you were saying for yours, or you do an in wall. But in this case, I'm going to actually remove the walls, build another kind of wall behind so that I can kind of keep the temperatures right and everything else. And ultimately block the sound and then treat the room and put the speakers behind the wall. And then I'm going to do material. So we'll do a fabric material across the walls. And, you know, it's a little bit more, no doubt, but I'm going to do the work myself. You know, we'll build it out and then it's going to make the room sound bigger. So, you know, although I can only get maybe 3 seats wide in there, it's going to feel like the room's bigger because I've actually pushed it outwards. You know, and those are the kinds of things, you know, my plan is to be able to share as I'm kind of doing those steps. I'm looking at, you know, obviously I have my market maker side that's helping manufacturers and integrators with their marketing content, things like that. But what I want to be able to start, my hope is August 1st, kind of moving in right now, is basically, you know, a channel dedicated to, you know, how do you build these things out, you know, and home theater, but not just home theater, you know, looking at whole home audio, looking at lighting control, you know, all these things that I'm passionate about and done in the past, even, you know, security and cameras outside and indoor lighting and outdoor lighting. And, you know, there's so many really cool things in there that people should be experiencing. And prices have come down on a lot of these areas where, you know, you have a good, better, best, right? You know, you've got the Primo Lutron Ketra, which is like the best of the best. You can dim it down to 0.1 with no flickering. It's absolutely nuts when you see it. You're like, that's great. And you don't have to put that in every room of the house. You could mix that with another room that, you know, only needs to go to 1% dimming. You know, with a bulb that costs, you know, half or a third the price, right? And so what I want to be able to show is teach people how all of that works so that they can understand it, not selling them anything, just education. And I think it's a great way to do it. And then for me, similar as, you know, we were talking about before about, hey, if you're going to Cedia, you know, let me introduce you to some people, right? You know, you can do some interviews. I've been fortunate enough in my 23 years to meet a lot of the manufacturers, having worked on the manufacturing side. You know, I call people up and I can usually, you know, get somebody there that I know or get introduced to. So from my perspective, if I can share that knowledge with people, it's a great thing to do. I'm fortunate and blessed to be, you know, in this area for so long and, you know, to have something that I love to do, you know, as my job in educating people. And so, you know, what I really want to be able to do is say, okay, you want to learn about outdoor lighting? Let's teach you about outdoor lighting. And, because this is an issue, and we know this is an issue online. This is why I love you, and you know, and Giles, and you know, and Todd, and you know, there's certain people that I think do it right because you're really trying to educate, present your opinion, but you can be open to other people's opinions. But you know, unfortunately, what we see a lot on the internet is just random opinions being spouted, right? And yeah. People don't really know. So, like in my mind, and I was having this conversation with somebody last week. It's like, okay, I'm watching all this stuff on Dirac Live, right? And some people have played with it in the snap, but are they playing with it right? Some people have never even touched it, but have a big opinion on it. Mm. You know, from my thing is, it's like, hey, we're going to talk about Dirac Live today. We're going to chat with the head of Dirac Live, you know, or yeah. The head of Dirac, right? You know, oh, we want to talk about Sony TVs and the difference between their technology and LG. Tell you what, let's bring on somebody from Sony and not, you know, let's bring on an engineer from Sony.
Right.
And so that's a lot of what I want to do is be able to bring on the quality products that are out there so that people can learn about them. And then it's right. Like, if you still end up buying, because again, no knock on, you know, if you end up buying a Vizio because that's what you can afford right now and it's great quality and it's better than what you had before, no doubt. But
right. If,
you know, but there's no reason or you should understand what the difference is between that and a Sony OLED, right? Or even Sony, you know, I saw a Sony 85 inch, I think at Costco the other day for like $1,500, right? I'm like,
not an OLED, right?
No, not an OLED, no. I was like, an 85 inch, right? You right. know, and if you're coming from a 50 inch 480p or 1080p, it's going to look dramatically better, right? So there is absolutely a place for somebody who wants a bigger TV. It's still 4K. It's still going to look great at $1,500.
I tell people that all the time.
But how could you not?
Get the biggest TV you can afford.
Yeah, exactly right. Right? You know, but
don't worry about quality. Yeah.
It's
no, seriously, because you don't know when you're starting out, you don't know what you don't know.
No, exactly right. I'm going to enjoy it.
You buy the best. If you spent all your money on the best quality television, like you want to get the best OLED, and the only thing you can afford is that, like, say a $2,000 55 inch OLED, you're not even going to know what you're getting if you're not in the, you know what I mean, you wouldn't know what you're seeing to know what was good or bad. So you're literally wasting your money. You'd be far better spending $1,500 on a literally crappier TV, but it's 85 inches and you're like, wow, look at that. And then while you're watching it, that's when you'll learn, hey, that doesn't look right up there, or something looks off compared to where I saw this one in the store on the other
tables aren't quite right.
I'm and you'll learn
because I'm on streaming, you know. And then it's exactly. Like, oh well, now I need to upgrade to the Netflix 4K, right? You know, things that you weren't necessarily doing. So fine tune what you have. I totally agree.
Yeah,
you know,
that's how you learn.
If I'm looking at this, if I'm the average consumer and I'm looking at a $1,500 85 inch Sony, right? So I'm thinking about the brand, and then I'm looking at a 5,000 now, it was 8,000, but you know, as you know, a year and a half later, 83 inch A90J, which is one that I have and love, right? So top of the OLEDs in that area. You know, how do I understand as a consumer what the difference is between a $1,500 Sony panel and a $5,000 Sony panel and what's right for me, right? Because I'm going to look at this and I'm going to be like, well, yeah, they're ripping me off on that one. How did you do that when I can find it at Costco for $1,500? Not the same screen.
No.
Both are great. Both are there for a reason. But, you know, hey, why not bring on somebody from Sony to be able to talk about that and understand what the difference is and not just say, so you have to buy the top one, but to be able to say, here's where you're going to want this $1,500 one. Here's where you're going to want the $3,000 one. And here's the type of room or system that you're going to want the $5,000 one. You know, and I think those are the conversations that in my mind, or at least, you know, what I want to do, because we all have to have a different way of creating content, right? Because in my mind, it's additive. Right. It's not, oh, I'm pulling somebody from DJ. It's like, hey, DJ, I've got some great content that if you guys have, you know, and all this content we have nowadays, if they want to watch here, they should check it out too. Right. And so, you know, my kind of pitch on it is going to be, let's talk with the manufacturers. Let's have real discussions on this. I'm going to educate, not pitching stuff, not, you know, but just educate people on the stuff. But instead of just spouting out opinions, which may not be right on a product that I may or may not have ever touched,
right?
You know, let's bring in some people that actually understand this stuff. you know, we're going to talk acoustics. I'm going to bring on Anthony Grimani, you know, or Andrew Steele, you know, over at KYD with Keith, or, you know, let me bring in somebody that truly knows this stuff. If we're going to talk lighting, let's talk with Lutron, you know, or American Electric Prolux. You know, those are the things that I think can benefit consumers. So at least you understand where you're going to spend your dollars. You can make an educated decision. I don't care what you spend on it, you know, but you should at least know, because I'm watching people like with home builders, you know, they're still putting in these basic lights and this and that. This home here, DJ, it kills me. This house, the owner was a builder. So he actually built the house, right? He designed and built, and he did that for a living. He loves woodwork. The amount of built-ins and like coffered ceilings, wainscoting on all this stuff, like, it's amazingly different than my previous house, right? You know, and you know, we're very fortunate to have been able to come in here. I'm going to be using it for work, but the guy knows nothing about lighting.
Right.
And so there are just 6-inch cans. The house is 10 years old. So again, it's not that old in the,
right.
Like, there's been better lighting and recessed and all this and that, you know, for years now, linear lighting and strip lighting. And there are just 6-inch cans all over the place, and it looks super ugly. And then there are all over the walls, right? And you walk in, like DJ, you'd walk in. I walk in, I've been in this house 30 times now. I don't know what switch is which. Like,
yeah.
Oh, that didn't turn on that one. This didn't turn on that one. And there are two dimmers in the entire house. Every other light is just on or off. And right. I'm like, and this is a very large house. This is, so it's about 5,600 square feet. It's big.
Wow.
And like I said, I have this room. I've got my sound room. I've got, you know, I bought this because it was great for space for the family. But also I could use it for work, right? I've got I've got an interview room. So if somebody comes down, you come out this way, DJ, I will sit you down, two special chairs, and I'll be setting up the camera system in there. I really want to have some fun with it, right? You know, and do the things that I know. You know, and
I got to interrupt you because my listeners are going, oh my God. It's like, no. You have no idea since the last time we talked. I told you my, like, this was before we started recording. I'll tell you, my world got turned upside down. I'm building a house.
Oh,
you don't know this yet. It's like, listeners don't realize that you don't know that I'm building a house. Oh. I'm like closing on the land within weeks. Okay. I'm building the house from the ground up. My theater, the basement is the theater, everything. A lot of what you're saying is like everything I'm going through right now. I've hesitated. Like, I want to film some of the stuff I'm doing with the theater, but I don't want to get, it's just so much for me right now. And it's like, I need to do, like, we're taking my parents in, so I'm building a bigger house than I can really afford. So I'm trying to, I'm doing all the work. I'm building the house myself, literally. Yeah. So except for plumbing and electric, basically. Yeah. And, but yeah, so I'm trying to learn all the things you're saying. I'm like, my listeners are like, oh God, it's like you and I are going to be talking like daily now. Like, I need lighting. I'm like, I don't want to put in ugly can lighting.
DJ's going to be my first subscriber as I start up, right?
Absolutely. And let me also say this too, because listening to you talk about these things and a lot of, you know, I don't think my listeners are that way, but a lot of people, like you said, they hate on stuff. Oh, it's too much money. It's too much this. It's too much that. There's also a part of me and a lot of people that I want to see this stuff to see how can I duplicate that in my own way, but far cheaper.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it with like, I'm going to, you know, whatever you try to work around the system. Like I did for 20 years with Kaleidoscape.
Yep.
You try to work around it. How can I do that? How can I get this? How can I get that? I mean, I was trying to do Atmos before Atmos was invented. You know, it's like, I'm just throwing sound up there. I don't know what it was, but it wasn't right. But it was enveloping. It was all wrong.
And there were
it's just fun.
Yeah, absolutely. There were
Yamaha had that Atmos stuff.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Do you have the channel up and running yet?
No.
August. Okay.
I need to. I can't wait. If you'll have me on when I launch it, my My issue, obviously,
I'll do a weekly show with you. You got me so excited.
Hey, well, it's just like you said, right? You're closing on land. You want to film this stuff, but there's so much going on. You know, we did the same thing. We went bigger. I don't have family moving in, but we moved further away. So we've lived 8 blocks away from my in-laws for 20 years, which I love, right? Yeah. And there are plenty of jokes in there, but, you know, sometimes
so you ran.
That's right. But, you know, on the plus side, you know, my daughter, like I said, she's 17. She just graduated last week. I've never hired a babysitter. Like, my family has always been there to support. I've appreciated that, right? So I love it. Well, now we're only moving 2 hours away. So on one hand, it's not that far away. But as, you know, but as family gets older, like, we wanted a place. I have never had a house. Like, my house we've been in for 20 years. It doesn't have a spare bedroom. Like, you know, it's a 3-bedroom where, you know, we're in San Mateo. It's the North Bay area of California, right? You know, when we built that house, it was, it's just under 2,000 square feet. So it's a good size house by all means. It's taken care of us for 20 years. But it never had the room to like invite people over. Well, you know, my mom moved away a few years ago to Colorado. My dad moved away to Arizona. So if they come out, we've never really had a place for them to stay, you know, you know, like I said, my in-laws 8 blocks away. So that was never a problem. We see him all the time. But now we're moving 2 hours away. Well, I'm like, yeah, well, guess what? Now when my dad comes out, they can stay for a week, you know, or my mom or my in-laws, they can stay for a week or two because now we've got more bedrooms, you know, and I can do as I'm working on stuff, I have the space to be able to work on those things and not be tripping over each other. I think, you know, when COVID started, I've been used to being able to work from home sometimes and Zoom. You know, I was doing Zoom before it was cool.
Yeah.
but
before it was required.
That's right. Before it was required, really. You know. But when I was at Logitech, there was lots of stuff where we were doing video conferencing as it was, you know, in its infancy, right? And so I've always enjoyed those things. Well, when COVID started and my daughter's in high school taking classes at home, and then my wife's a teacher, literally teaching for 6 hours a day, you know, in the house, we're all talking over each other. You know, and the house wasn't built for the acoustics of that. So, you know, she can hear me. I can hear her. You know, my daughter's not talking as much because she's being taught to, but when she's answering, but she can hear us. And so now I've got a place where I've got an upstairs office, downstairs office. I can close the doors. Everything will be set acoustically so it won't impact everybody else. I can do the things that I want to do. Like when we've talked in the past and my wife can hear us, you know, in the kitchen. You know, now those things are solved. And I think that becomes more and more important as more people are doing remote work to how do I set up my room properly? Right. You know, how do I add little things like the slat wall behind me, that has a felt behind it and some of the other panels that I have that I'm putting up that make it so that, you know, any echoes, like I said, that you can hear now, you won't be able to really hear, you know, it'll sound quality, but it still looks good. You know, it's not like I have all this stuff around my living room. You know, and so, yeah, you know, I get, you know, and again, it's a bigger house than I've ever thought of doing, but I'm using it for work. I'm doing whatever with it. And yeah, I hope that everybody looks at it as, not, oh my God, look what he's buying. And it's ostentatious. And it's that it's, hey, this is really cool. Right.
It's for, you know, work and, too.
Yeah, and Brett, Frank, write a little of it off and it'll be all good. But, you know, but I want to be able to show people, like you said, you know, here's the best, better, and good. You know, I'm not just going to show the top stuff and say, you know, it sucks if you don't buy Lutron Ketra. It's like, no, here's why you should buy Lutron Ketra, or at least in key rooms. But here's a middle level and here's a DIY level, right? Because if you feel confident in doing this yourself, like you said, I've done that for years. How can I build this myself for cheaper? I think that that's great, because if you weren't going to buy this anyways, Lutron doesn't care. You know, this is the technology that we're talking about. That's what I'm trying to educate on. Why colored lighting? Why different Kelvins? I was talking, we had a construction guy in here. Fortunately, we move in and first thing that we find, because we had a lot of rain this winter, is of course there was a leak in my roof. So, you know.
I hope that doesn't happen to me, but if it does, it's my fault. Either. I built it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know who to blame.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it's one of those things that, like, just like you said, you know, I frankly stretched myself because I knew I was going to use it for work. It was a beautiful home. Everybody was happy with it. You know, and I stretched myself like most of us do to be able to pick it up. And then, of course, you know, 2 months later, it's like, oh, by the way, yeah, we're noticing some water damage and some, you know, and a little bit of mold. And I'm like, oh,
yeah.
You know, do you use your insurance? Do you not? Do you, you know, I mean, there's so many people come into that, right? You know, and so, you know, I want to be able to share that with people who, you know, again, maybe looking at their first house or like you said, building a house. We're all in different spots and it doesn't matter where you are in the US, you're still having those same issues, right? What do I put in for lighting control? You know, we talk about theater because we love it. Theater is like this much, right? Most of us don't have a dedicated space. Most of us don't, you know, but everybody's got lights, you know, and some of that lighting sucks in houses. This house, the lighting sucks, you know.
Well, that's why I'm thinking of like for lighting control. And I'm talking with my wife about it. I'm looking at different options because my, you know, my parents are moving in. They're getting older. I want something that's rock solid that they'll be able to use easily that, I already get the phone calls like, my iPhone's doing this funny thing. And it's like, oh my God. And now when they'd be next door, it'll be like, what was the, oh, my dad, if you're listening, sorry, buddy. He calls me the other day and he goes, he has a Toyota something or other as a, you know, SUV. And he's like, how do you get the back seat, AC working back here? And I'm like, we had this like 20 minute conversation and I'm like, he couldn't get it working. And I was like, why do you care?
You're driving. Right? You're the only one in the car.
I'm like, you're the only, I'm like, it's just the two of yous. You're like 70, 76, 74 years old. The two of you, who's going in the back? Oh, the grandchildren. You're driving them 10 minutes.
That's right.
I'm like, and he's doing this on a day that's like, it was like 70 degrees. It wasn't even that hot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the new cars now, I didn't want to get into it, but the new cars now are automatic. They know where people are.
And
they'll push the sound, even in the Toyotas. And he's got a fairly new Toyota. And it's like, it pushes the air. Like my wife's car, she has the new RAV, the Prime. And it'll actually, like, if the sun is on the driver's side, it'll cool that side more than the passenger side. Yeah.
Wow.
So like they know that. So then you get a guy that, you know, was used to fixing a Buick back in the 60s. He's like, why don't I get cold air blasting out here? I'm like, it's not needed. You don't need it. Don't worry about it. But anyways, to get back to the lighting and stuff, when you're building the house, I mean, to redo the house I'm in right now, that'd be a substantial cost.
Sure.
Because you already have lighting.
Yeah.
You have that little switch. So it costs that much to do the whole house.
Sure.
If you're building the house and you do it right the first time, you're spending more than you would have if you just put a switch in, but you're saving a ton of money because you're not spending and then upgrading later. You're just doing it right the first time. And that's what I'm trying to get there. And I'm trying to figure out which one's best. And I don't have, you know, crazy money to spend on it, but at the same time, I want it to be rock solid when it's done. I mean, that's the thing. Old school off on is rock solid.
It works.
Yeah. You know, so, but there's all of those things that come into play and it's, yes, do I want, I'll have probably something a little fancier in the theater alone, but if you can do a control four for everything and then upgraded a higher end control four or whatever,
different whatevers. Yeah.
Right.
And I think that's the key thing. And obviously for you, DJ, you know, just call me for whatever you need. Let's work through, you know, whatever it is, lighting, you know, HVAC. So this house, DJ, so this is super cool. So
you're getting into HVAC too?
Dude, you know, well,
your channel is going to be HVAC, amazing.
Like, other than the fact that like I know how to put in my Nest or, you know, you know, any of those, but so this house, like I said, when they built it, because it was the builder, he was using this as the idea was to use it as a demo, right? So I mean, he put everything
in right.
So every room has a thermostat control and the ducts. So like, if you know, like general, right? I only general HVAC, I understand the concept. So, so it's got, you know, two stories. So it's got, you know, two ACs and two heaters, right? Heaters on gas, ACs on AC. And so on electric.
It's on AC.
It just AC. Runs itself. Yeah.
This is that education part we're talking about, Brett.
That's right. So it's on AC. So it runs electric. But so the way that it pumps through, it runs through kind of a main area. And then, you know, typically you have duct work that runs out to branches out to each room, right? So in the duct, there is a rubber plastic bladder and it has a sensor in there. So it's tied to a wireless thermostat in each room. And if you adjust the thermostat in the room, it knows and it will actually, so if you're in the zone where you want it to be, the bladder inflates. So if another room needs air or heat, no air comes into that room. And that's in every room of the house, right? Now, the system, like I said, I'm buying it after the fact and this and that, but crazy expensive system that didn't sell enough, that didn't do, you know, I mean, so it's, so I get why most people don't have it. I probably wouldn't put it in. However, there are newer products that can electronically, that do the same thing on a more DIY basis, that have like the fan vents in the, you know, so you're venting the room. And it can close it automatically because you're not going to do it. It's like shades. You're not going to open and close every shade in the room to block the light at certain times, three times a day, right? But you buy automated shades and it'll do that. And you're going to end up getting better comfort, better lighting. You don't fade your floors. You know, there's a lot of benefits, right? And so, but I'm looking at some of these other products that I'm like, yeah, this is more DIY. Now, there's things that you have to know, like, so there's pressurization in HVAC systems. So the issue is you can't just turn on the HVAC and blow it into one room because there's too much pressure and you can actually damage your AC unit. And so that's why most guys are like, oh, no, you can't do these things. But if you understand it, or like in this case, it's got like a smart brain, it actually knows what the pressurization is and it'll actually open up another room because it needs to have enough flow. Now, do these DIY products do that yet? I don't know yet, right? That's what I want to kind of figure out and how they work. But the fact that they're there, or the fact that even like there's new products with new vents that just look far cleaner and you can paint them. Yeah. They don't have like the ugly vertical. And I'll watch people in the forums be like, that's not going to work with pressurization. And I'm like, how do you know?
You don't know what's on the other side of it. No. You don't like, or, I've seen exactly what you,
what's the airflow. They're just seeing that the middle doesn't have airflow. It's flowing around the side, but that's what you want.
Right.
Because you don't always want the air blowing straight on you. Right. And so as long as enough air is flowing out. And so I asked an HVAC guy, because I had to have the guy teach me how this system works here. Right. Like, I need to understand this. Don't just like the seller was like, yeah, you know, you hit the buttons. And I'm like, no, I need to understand this tech. I need to understand it. And so I had him come in, paid to have him come in, and, you know, and he's walking me through all this stuff. And I said, what do you think about those vents? Yeah, no, they're fine. You know, he goes, you know, they're flowing enough air and just make sure. And then that's it. It's just flowing differently. So I'm like, those are the kinds of things where I say, like, I don't want to just have an opinion on something or listen to people in the forums who really have no clue.
Yeah.
Even if they're a professional, but they haven't done it, they're just making off the cuff comments, right? We see this all the time. Even AV installers. Oh, you can't do that. You can't, you know, it's the TV above the fireplace discussion, right? You know,
yeah.
Yes, I can totally understand where your viewing angles are. There is no debate, but it also depends on how far back your seating is. It also depends on if you're on a recliner or not, right? There are so many things that you can't just say you can never put a TV above the fireplace.
Yeah. And I'm so going to. I have no choice. My living room, I have no other wall in the living room that on the house we're building. And we have a big, basically, it's like an 8-foot span. And that's where the wood stove is going. And but I'm designing it as such that I can, the TV will go above it. And our main seating position is like 15 feet away. So we're fine.
It doesn't matter. 2 feet doesn't change.
It's like a bedroom. And it's a big living space that goes off into it's a whole open floor plan with the kitchen and stuff. So like when people are over, everybody can see it. Everybody standing, sitting would be able to see it. It's fine. Yes, it's not ideal, but go downstairs if you want ideal. Right. Well, I don't care.
Right. Exactly. This is family. This is background noise. This is like what I do while I'm working or doing something at night. Right. You know,
right.
Or like you said, yeah, it's an open concept and I can see it from my kitchen, which is 20 feet away and I'm standing up you know, so there's so many things that come into play. This is where I always have a hard time with people like using, you know, absolutes, right? Oh, you can't do that.
You can't do that.
Yeah. Like, people are going to do it. You know, I've watched people on the other side that rather than put the TV centered in the room, the couch is centered in the room and the TV is off to the side. So it's at the appropriate height, but it's like up against the wall.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, well, so now I'm like tilted towards the side.
Neck pain.
Yeah. You know, your center channels aren't working right. Everything else. I'm like, you're changing one thing for another. Right. You know, right. And so I love products like Mantle Mount that are out there where they can actually like bring the TV down.
Yeah.
So there are great products that are out there that can help with those things. You know, if you want to have it at an eye level or this or that, and then it's all use. So absolutely. If you have the budget for it, go for it. There's products that can help build those things out that are really, really trick and cool. But yeah, you know, at the end of the day, like I need to know everything. I sit, my chair's a recliner, you know, I'm angled back. That automatically puts me up just like in a bedroom, just like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and like you said, if you really want to sit down and focus and do it right. Yeah. We're going to go walk into the home theater room where we can, you know, not just for movies, it's for gaming, it's for TV game. It's, you know, whatever you want to watch on it.
Yep.
You know, that's the fun stuff, you know? And so, so like I said, I'm hoping to have this launched if we're moving in this week. We delayed my daughter's graduation party till like early July. So we got family coming out for that. So I was asked not to rip up one of the rooms that people are going to have to stay in.
Oh yeah.
Peter, I'm like, that's fine. We'll keep it. And then, they're out like July 9th, July 10th and the walls come down.
There you go.
So I'm hoping I'll get that started, get that planned out. And then, hopefully August 1, I got to figure out my channel name and all my stuff. But, you know, I'm hoping to talk about house stuff. I'm, you know, lighting control, security control, indoor, outdoor lighting, whole home audio, obviously theater stuff. You know, but the idea is there's a lot of people that need those questions answered, right?
Yeah.
You know, that a home theater is one room of the house, but what about the rest of the house? You know? And so I'm hoping a lot of people like it, and yeah, I'm more than happy to have you as a first subscriber, DJ.
Yeah,
and in the meantime, we can always chat. I love talking.
Yeah.
You know that. So, you know,
I had no idea all this was coming when I asked you to come on.
I know. There's so much cool new stuff, right? So same as you. Like, I didn't realize you were building a house. Dude, that's amazing.
I wish I could
have done this from scratch and we thought about it. There's actually, at some point, if my business was going right and I wanted to really do something from scratch, there's a lot next door that I'm like, hey, ooh. I could have my daughter could stay there, in-laws, parents, you know, somebody else. I've even thought about making it like a true demo house so like people could stay, you know, do it like an Airbnb. Like, hey, you're looking at doing a home theater, DJ, you come out, you want to do lighting control. Why wouldn't you spend $1,000, you know, flying out $500, you know,
I've said that with my place, do an Airbnb with a theater and do or people. Yeah. Same with my new place. I'd be like, come out. Yeah. And I just had my first listener last week came out to see my theater. And I'm like, wow, do I have the bug now? I'm like, you got to be careful, though. It. But yeah, it's so much fun. And it's like, once I'm done with the house building, just like you, once you're done with your remodel, you're going to have time to play. You're going to have time to do all that. And your business, it is for your business. And I'm hoping that, you know, it'll be for me, for my retirement, for fun. And we and just play with it and do stuff. And I definitely want to travel and see different places, but also have people here just like you're doing. And it's, I swear to God, I just hit you up. Cause I'm like, I haven't talked to you in a while. And I'm like, let's do this. And it's like, again, here we go again. It's like,
it's you know, it's always there. And because, and fortunately, you know, my business has been strong and I'm picking up clients.
Great.
So I've just been so focused. And then like we're moving, my daughter's graduating. Then we have an issue in the house. We're trying to fix. Like it's been nuts, DJ. I feel like I haven't had any day off for like, you know, for the last like month or two. Yeah. You know, and everybody's stressed. I mean, all these things again that you know that are there that I you know. So yeah, so I'm not reaching out to you guys and saying, hey, think about all this, and hey, can I get on the show? It always seems to be like this, where it's just like, hey, yeah, I got a space. Something's
what
coming
a coincidence.
Up.
Like,
I
mirrored lives, buddy. Mirrored lives. Yeah. My wife, my daughter got married in December. I'll catch you up.
Congrats.
So yeah, thank you. It's been a whirlwind. She graduated 2 years before that. She got engaged that summer. She boom, 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 got married, doing this. They bought a house, and now, you know, as my listeners know, I've been building, remodeling that house. They bought a house from the 60s and we tore down walls. So everything you're about to do, that's what I'm still doing there. And then coming into this, but it's like, but yeah, not a, you know, not a spare moment, but no, still, no. I, and that's why people, you know, outside of the podcast, people are like, you maybe you should stop doing. I'm like, no, this is the only time I have fun. Oh, I get to sit down and talk to me. I'm doing it twice a week. And I'm like, this is when I get to relax and geek out and just have a blast. And just, it really is. And it's
and
like,
that's the thing, right? Nothing scripted, nothing planned. You're just kind of like, no. Let's talk about stuff and see
that's
where
what I said to you. I'm like, you know, this, you're like, what do I need to be prepared? I'm like, you know me, nothing. Yeah, like, I don't think we've ever been at a loss for words.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Between you and I, it is not, there is no dead time, but.
Oh, yeah, you know what? Let me tell you this one. Yeah. You know what Todd Anderson came up with?
What's that?
I had him on and we were approaching 3 hours. We're at 2 hours and 50 minutes talking. Okay. And he's like, huh, maybe I could make this. Oh, it looks like I'm going to make the 3 hour mark. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And he goes, just off the top of his head, he goes, do you think you could go talk 24 hours? Without hesitation. I was like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I could do it. I'm like, and it went from there, and now we're going to do it for a charity, and I'm just going to book people and just be like, and you were one of the people I was.
Dude,
like,
I'm in.
There's like three people I could get, and I know that would be all 24 hours.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I'll be like, all right, I just got to book different people. I'm like,
that's right. But or we'll cycle through, right? You know, throw me on there, then throw Ton on there, then throw me on again.
Exactly. You'd be like, oh, but yeah, it's like talk a 24-hour home theater podcast. And live stream. Live stream of a 24-hour show. And
like I said, I mean, either that'll way. That would be a blast. You know, if it's for charity and doing something else, I'm totally in.
Yeah.
You know, whatever time we need for it. More, I know we can fill up the time, especially if it's a little ways from now, because I'll have a ton of stuff to be able to talk about in the house.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like you will too. You know, and yeah, we could run through there. And yeah, I heard, so you did that with, I'm blanking now.
What did I do?
You did one for
good
charity.
Or bad?
You did it. No. You did a takeover the other day.
Oh, for the juvenile diabetes with Joe.
Yeah.
So Joe Klusnik,
right?
Yep. Joe took. Yeah, he was on Takeover Tuesday, and we did. We raised between my listeners and my Patreon. We raised over almost $900. So it was really good. One listener donated $522 because it was what I think it was his grandmother. Okay. I'm sorry if it was had just passed away on 522 and that's what they wanted. Well, that's what they wanted. So they were like, he's like, I couldn't think of a better number than 522. Yeah. So he gave 522 and then Joe is going to match that.
Okay.
And so all of that going to, you know, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, JDRF. So yeah. And the month before that, I had on a friend of mine who is a Boston Marathon survivor. And we donated to Heather Abbott Foundation, which does prosthetics for people. So, but yeah, I talked to you about this a while ago, about the charity stuff and everything. Yeah. And it's growing and we'll get there. And SBS stepped up and for the April one, for the Boston Marathon one, they offered up a pair of Prime wireless speakers. So to, you know, get people to donate and watch it. So we, you know, we had a winner. My winner was in Canada, Gurinder. He won them. So, but yeah, we're growing. We're having fun, and it's, you know, growing the charity thing. So
yeah, if you can do it and have some additional good out of it, right? You know, something that you're happy to do anyways for free, and you get to kind of generate some money for some other, you know, good causes. Then I think that's great. But yeah, Joe is telling me because Joe lives not that far away from me now. So
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He's up in the Sacramento area, you know, up by me as well. And so, so I'm looking forward to that because obviously I've known him for years. He actually, he was the one that
introduced us. Yeah.
So I was chatting with him the other day and I didn't get a chance to chat with him, but I was like, I had seen a post for it. And I've been so busy. I hadn't been able to see it, but I want to be able to watch it. And but he was talking about how he had taken over, you know, Brightside for the day. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's amazing.
Oh, he did.
So, I think that's tremendous. We will have to, once I get a little settled down, I'd love to do something in that as well. I'm sure we can find some, you know, some people to help donate and do some stuff. And yeah, let's have some fun with
cool. So, yeah, yeah.
I'd love to do that. And like I said, if you're doing a 24-hour charity, I'm in, man. Let's,
that's going to be fun.
I'm absolutely good for that. So
yeah. Cool. Did you see Joe was on another podcast this week?
So I
didn't get rant.
He was supposed to send me a link and he didn't. He was busy.
Oh,
because I asked him, like, give me a link. I will show up. But yeah, no, that's what we were chatting, because he was seeing how I was doing. He knows I've been getting ready to move up here. And I was trying to see him while I was up here, and he's like, all right, because I'm actually taking over another podcast. So
yeah, he sat in that their other co-host is on vacation this entire month. So he sat in just for this week. It drops. Yeah. Actually, I think the audio drops tomorrow. The video is on YouTube right now. So I heard that earlier. I texted him right away. I was like, hey, Joe, nice job. And he goes, would you get an early release? I go, no, they put the video out on YouTube always on Tuesdays or Wednesdays or something. It went early. So, but yeah, he's super knowledgeable too.
Oh, yeah.
He's just
Joe's a great guy. It's always fun to chat with him. And he was at Cedia a few years back. Like I said, I can't remember if he already had a pass or if I got him a pass, but you know, but yeah, no, we had drinks a couple times, and you know, sitting down and chatting and walking through the Kaleidoscape booth and all that kind of stuff. And so yeah, I love when people come out there, and you know, anybody that's in that area, you know, like I told you, DJ, if any of you, I know, I'd throw it out there, but if anybody is in the area and wants to go to Cedia, you know, let me know. I think it's a great thing for people to be able to check out. Especially if you are looking at different brands, getting to see demo showcases. Now, a lot of these, because they're temporary, right? So they don't always sound exactly the best or do this or that. but they're often still amazing demos that most people don't get to see, right? And all in one place. And you can chat with people that are truly knowledgeable about the products. You know, oftentimes there's, you know, solid engineers there and everybody else, not just the sales guys. And so I always love getting to go out there. I get to see for me, from an industry perspective, it's the one time a year that, like, there's people that we know that I only see one time a year, right? You know, and we only talk one time a year, but you just catch right back up, and you know, you get a chance to be able to, you know, have dinner or do something or, and so, you know, I always love to get to go see friends. Last year was tremendous. I was out there the year before when it was still pretty dead. We weren't traveling yet, but we were out there when I was with Kaleidoscape, and it was still one of the better shows because it was a little slowed down. You weren't always packed, you know, with people so you got to chat a little bit more with people about the stuff and give them a little bit more time. And so that was actually, I thought it was a blast of a Cedia. And then last year was, I mean, packed. So, you know, it was a blast for different reasons. And I think this year in Denver, and I think it's going to be in Denver the next three that they've signed up for.
Oh, really? Okay.
And Denver's a great spot for Cedia.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in Cedia in the past when it's at Denver, and tons of hotels and food, you know, right off that strip. So you can walk everywhere. There's plenty of
my wife already has our hotel room.
Yeah.
It's like literally, I think it's the hotel like right across from the main hotel where it is. Okay. So we're not in that hotel. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like right across the street. So
it's like, it's tough, man. You got to book early, and a lot of people end up, you know, far down the way. Or last year I was hosting an event with one of my dealers who happened to be in the Dallas area right there. And so, you know, I ended up having a little Airbnb so that I had a kitchen space, because we were going to be bringing some stuff in for caterer to be able to have a place to kind of work. And it worked out really well. I had another great friend of mine, Mike Grubb, who has been in the industry forever as well. And he ended up, like I said, we were throwing this event, and he was coming in the next day. And I'm like, change your flight, right? Because you usually do that, you know, not a problem. Change your flight. And because, you know, you couldn't get a hotel room. It was like, you know, $500 to change it. I'm like, no, you just spend the night in my place. There's an extra bed.
Jeez. Nice.
And so it was a blast. We had a great time with it. I just, you know, anytime you can get a chance to, you know, meet your viewers, meet people like, you know, people that we chat again semi-regularly or when we're doing stuff like this, but we've never met. I was chatting with somebody the other day. I've known him for probably 4 or 5 years. Yeah. And we've never actually met.
Oh, I know.
You're just talking dealers across the nation, right? So it's like, you know, especially if it's in the last 3 or 5 years, you know, there's a lot of people that haven't met because I haven't flown out as much, or, you know, I used to do a lot of trips to the East Coast or Midwest or Southern California. And, you know, now I haven't done as much, and that's probably going to start picking up. But I love anytime you get a chance to chat with people and it's like, oh yeah, let's actually meet face to face and, you know, clean glasses if we can. And, you know, it's always a good time.
Let me ask you this. Yep. Is there something like I've noticed, like Kaleidoscape or all, I see their stuff. I see other manufacturers, SVS in particular. And it's like they travel around the world, but nothing ever happens in Boston. Is there a reason? No, I'm like, serious, like, cause I would just go to these things. The closest they get, is it because New York is so big and they figure they hit that and everybody in like New England area just goes there anyway.
Goes down there. I mean, that's probably one of it, right? So there's a few events. Sometimes it, you know, it also comes in who's hosting things and are they consumer or are they industry events, right? So Cedia as an example. So like, we're talking about Cedia. So there's the big Cedia. But Cedia puts on, you know, we'll call them relatively local, they call them Cedia Tech Summits. And so they're great events. I can't remember if they do one in Boston or not. So I'm not going to say that, you know, that it's right or wrong or, you know, wherever it is.
Yeah.
But they're all over the place. Now, a lot of times they get used as, for people that maybe couldn't go, industry people. So again, imagine like if you're 10 people deep in your company, you may not be able to afford to bring all 10 people out, or they may be busy. And
right.
Right. So like the owner goes, the buyer goes, whoever else, lead tech, whoever. So a lot of these are designed to kind of have like the rest of the team go because they're more in the area. So yeah, I can imagine doing stuff in, you know, in New York or slightly outside, where the assumption is New England and, you know, Boston are, you know, just traveling down for a day or two.
Right.
And it's still cheaper than flying all the way out to, you know, to wherever it is.
Right.
Like Dallas, Colorado, you know, wherever. I mean, you're right. I don't think I've been to Boston too many times. Now I will say I was out at Boston and loved it. Cause Bowers and Wilkins used to have a training site out there. And they had a great showroom out there. So we actually, I got to go fly out there. It's like, you know, it's commercial area. So it's like out in the middle of nowhere, right? All brick and everything ready for the
winter.
But then we did kind of a, we'll call it a pub crawl. You know, we did a little pub walk, you know, through all the different stuff in there. And it was cool. We got to see like the old cemeteries, where I think Ben Franklin and some of those guys are out there. We got to see, you know, there's some really, really cool stuff out there. So, but I, you know, we can always look at doing more. I agree. It's the North Bay really doesn't get a lot of that either. LA gets all of it. So
yeah,
you know, when I do, like if there's a show or a local show, 9 times out of 10, it's down in like LA or San Diego. You really don't see as much of it like right where I am, or especially where I'm going to be. They don't really come up to Sacramento or, you know, but even like San Francisco, you know, you assume there are a lot of people, a lot of money. I mean, that's not where they base it. It's just based on, are there more integrators there? Is it a bigger area? You know, if we're talking about like let's say in California, I was having this discussion the other day, Southern California, a lot more home theaters in Northern California. You know, and it's like,
well, a lot more people
money. Too, you can even say there's more money up here or whatever, you know, although it's swings with the stock market, I guess, but, you know, but it's one of those where houses are a little smaller up here. A lot of people are working, you know, they may be making good money, but they've just started out. So they really still don't have that much or, you know, so, you know, they're living in small little places in, you know, in San Francisco and the rest where, you know, again, it's one bedroom, maybe two bedrooms. So you don't really have a lot of room. Whereas when you go down to LA, there's a lot of suburb areas where the homes are bigger. You know, you have places. We don't have, generally in California, you don't have basements. You don't have that extra free space down there. So it's just harder to find that extra space, but in LA, you'll find more, you know, more palatial kind of places. And so with that comes, you know, the home theater, the bigger media center, the, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And so I think that's what drives a lot of the, you know, if you're a speaker company, and you're making real, you know, big speakers, theater speakers, things like that, you know, or two channel audio speakers for a listening room, then you need the space to do that. So I think they naturally kind of gravitate towards that, you know, hey, it's Texas, big homes down there. It's Florida, South Carolina, you know, kind of in the Maryland area, you know, areas like that where the values often are still high, but, you know, but the value of a home may not be as much as another area like a New York or something like that. But, you know, there's more people that are buying it because they have the space to be able to put that in. Right. I mean, right. I see more home theaters in the Midwest than I often do, you know, in the North Bay Area, even though if you looked at it per dollar, you know, they're spending more money on their home, but that's because they're spending more money for a smaller home. Right. You know, as in other places, that home theater may be half the cost to the cost of the house.
Yeah.
But it's what they love. It's passion. Right. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I love both sides of it. But, you know, like I said, if you can afford the space, I had somebody the other day, they're like, oh, you know, can we do this? Is there a place? Because I'm building a 10,000 square foot home, you know, not in, you know, not in the Bay Area, not in somewhere else. It's like, you know, you know, out further. But, you know, that's still big money. That's still more money than I've ever spent, you know, on a place to build, because you couldn't possibly build it, you know, for less than a couple million. Right. So.
Right. So let me ask you, do you see numbers like that? Like, do you have a ballpark on how many home theaters there are and how, like, cause we just spitball here, like, you and I were talking earlier, I don't know if it was recorded or not, where we were saying like 5%, maybe 5% of the population has a home theater. But if you know, like, have you seen information like that? How do you, and if you have, how do you come about that? Not that we want to get it. I'm just saying that's interesting to me.
Yeah, no, it is interesting stuff. Right. And so, you know, it's hard. You really can't put a good quantifiable number to it. Right. It's, you know, it's more general, you know, more, you know,
sales
chatting with you, we're doing this now. Yeah. So I look at sales, right. So if I look at, you know, how many Kaleidoscape users are there, or, you know, at BMW, how many BMW systems did we sell, and how many two channel, like, you know, if you look at like 800 series speakers versus in-wall speakers, or, you know, so, you know, or KEF in-wall, or, you know, home theater speakers, or JBL synthesis. And so, you know, there's ways where we can kind of, okay, I can extrapolate from, you know, how many systems is this guy selling? How many systems is that guy selling? You know, they say that there are 10,000. So CD will pull out a number and say there's 10,000 integrators in the US. Now, the reality is there's probably double to triple that, because you've got a lot of small companies. What they're usually talking about are companies that, let's say, do $1 million a year, have a showroom, you know, there's parameters, right? But there's plenty of guys that are just starting out on their own, and they're working out of their house, or they're doing this and that, you know, but are legit, you know, they know what they're doing. Right. Versus the guy who just kind of like, yeah, no, I'm a home theater guy now. And so it's tough to figure out what that number is, and what is that number? Because I'm sure even in that 10,000, that's still sneaking in a lot of small guys that, you know, where do you draw the line that it counts? Right. You know, it's a guy that just has some ability, or like we were talking, not to shut it down, you know, but like, you know, oh, I've done a few theaters. People have questions. There's a difference between what I do. I don't consider myself, you know, an integrator or anything at this point. I integrate, I help people with some design stuff when they ask. But that's not what I do for a living, right? You know, I'm in the industry, but that's not specifically what I do. And so, you know, so I'm not in there, but I have, you know, I'm a CEDIA member. You know, so am I getting counted in that, or am I not? You know, so it's hard to be able to see, but, you know, if you said there's 10,000 integrators, and, you know, of those integrators, that average is $1 million to $2 million a year in business, and how many systems are they doing? You know, the average system is still, if you ask a lot of people, I was, like I said, at this little show, local show, called CI Expo in Oakland. And I love these shows because it's not just the big guys that can afford to fly out to CEDIA. It's, you know, it's the local guy.
Right.
And it's, you know, and especially local in my area. I didn't have to fly there. I literally drove an hour, you know. So, you know, these are guys that I know or have met now, or, you know, so, you know, new people and old friends. And so, you know, I'll ask them, you know, what's your average home theater size? What's your this and that? How many media rooms are you doing? You know, again, you know, I'm asking that anecdotally. Right. You know, I'm not writing it down. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is, but it's like, but it gives me a feel. And so, you know, the average home theater system for somebody that's putting one in, either let's call them a good media room or a dedicated room.
Dedicated room. Yep.
You know, is about 25 to 50 grand. you know, and there's a hard stop on that. Whereas like if I ask 80% of the integrators, they don't do anything above 25 or 50 grand. And then you get to some of the other guys and they're like, hey, I don't touch anything less than 100 grand. You know, I mean, it's
right.
But the reality is it's a smaller and smaller percentage as you get in there. So, you know, home theater rooms, unfortunately, you know, again, if you ask your friends, the percentage is going to be higher. You ask my friends, the percentage is going to be higher. But, yeah, you know, it's probably only 2%. You know, I mean, I right. think it's 5%, right? You know, you get into better media rooms above a soundbar, you know, or a premium soundbar, but, you know, let's say an actual 5.1 system. Now you may be in the 5 to 7, 8, 10% range. You know, and then it shrinks down as the price goes up or the more
stuff right.
put in. You know, but, you know, that just means in my mind that there's more opportunity. And, you know, it's one of those things that's why with this house, and I've helped people through the years with the same thing because we're always talking about stuff. So I'll talk about lighting control and, you know, because I think it's important. You're doing mm-hmm. theater, you're doing something else. You should have some way to control it. And, you know, but when I'm doing this house, it's like, you know what? I can talk to a lot more people about lighting control because there's just a lot. Everybody needs lights in their house.
Right.
So, yeah. So the built-in audience is bigger. Right. But what I'm hoping is if I'm showing some stuff on lighting control, you may come over to learn about that. But then when there's a video next to it that's talking about home theater, you may click on it. Right. You know, right. And you may learn something and you're like, oh, really? So again, yeah. Sonos, but it's like, oh, my Sonos soundbar isn't the best of the
that's,
best.
That's not the best. Yeah.
Well, you know, and it's like, hey, if you were listening to a TV, that Sonos is a huge upgrade, right? Or,
yep.
you know, it's, again, it's not small money. If you put, you know, an Arc and two rears, you know, with their, what are they, the new 300s and the 100s. And then, you know, and a sub or two, and now you can put two subs, to kind of balance out the room. And so, you know, that's not small money for somebody to do that. So, you know, in my mind, if you're balancing aesthetics, with, you know, with wanting better sound, it's a great product because it's
yeah.
super easy. It's super easy to hook up. Everybody in the yep. house can use it. You know, I can be watching it for TV, but I can just as easily link it to the next room. Sonos has done a great job getting mm-hmm. to understand multi-room audio, whole house
oh, yeah.
audio. You know, whether
I think it's funny. I have it in my house. I've yeah. had it for years. My buddy Derek, he got it. Maybe 10 years ago, and he's like, mm-hmm. check this out. And then I started getting into it, and I have it through everything. And you're seeing it now. It's being utilized in like $100,000 system, whole home audio that, and I'm like, really? Sonos? But it's so rock. That is rock solid.
It is rock solid, right? You know, and you know, I'll sit in the forums and somebody's like, oh, I'm having issues with this and that. I'm like, guaranteed it's like, it's your network.
It's your network. It's yeah, exactly. It's not the product. There. Right. Yeah. It's your Wi-Fi, yeah. your network. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, I'll use bigger speakers and a true AVRs or preamps and, you know, and amps, for my home theater rooms or big media rooms. Mm-hmm. But like in my house in San Mateo and most likely up here, like I like having audio in every room of the house, you know? And so I think I have 8 Sonos amps, you know, running various speakers through my house, my old house, and I'll end up mm-hmm. you know, wiring in to do the same thing here. And if there's a room where you can't really wire to, then, you know, again, yeah, you can put a move or a 5 or, you know, whatever it is sound wise that you want. But in the bedrooms where sometimes it just doesn't make sense or it's a spare bedroom, right? How often is it getting yeah. used? I'm not going to put 10 grand worth of stereo equipment in there, you know, but if I can put a sound bar, but I also hate the sound of coming from the TV, you know, you know, I love the fact that people are maybe trying to put better speakers in there, but most of the time they're still so small. So, you know, if I can put a, you know, again, an Arc or, you know, play bars and, you know, but Arc being the kind of the latest, or, you know, beams are just too small in my mind now, you know, TVs are 85 inches. You put this little beam on it and it's like,
it's in a bedroom. That's what I do.
I used it. Something a little bit closer to the lines of the TV, right? Leon and those have done great jobs making custom pieces where it's just framed out and may have a Sonos piece inside of it, but at least it kind of looks like it
looks right. Yeah.
But I've used both. I, you know, had a beam in my daughter's room because she had a little 32 inch TV, you know, and it's like 32 or 42. So it fit perfect. Mm-hmm. And so I think those are great in there. And the fact that I can throw a little sub in the corner, and get relatively good sound, you know, that's in there. I think is tremendous. And it gets people, like you said, it gives them the bug. It gives them the idea of like, oh yeah, this sounds much more full, you know, a little bit more bottom end than, than just my TV speakers. And then you start looking at, well, okay, well, now let me show you what this room has, you know, which is
right.
real speakers, right? You know, and an AVR, you know, and here's that step up that's going to be in my media room. Right. You know, and okay, we're ready to go past that. Well, now let's go into the gaming room, you know, which is full 5.1, right? You know, and now let's listen to that. And then finally, let's go into the theater where we're talking a full, you know, whatever. I don't exactly know what it's going to be yet, but you know, let's say it's a 7.4.4, you know, setup. You know, so you can run the gamut. And that's part of what I want to do as well is I don't like, let's say I could do all the rooms the same. I don't want them all to be the same. I want people to understand. I want to be able to show them, even with TVs, like I'm not buying all OLEDs. I believe in the quality of the OLED and some of the rooms where I'm going to be watching more, like my family room, like my bedroom and let's say the gaming room. Those will probably get OLEDs because it just is a better picture quality. I can control lighting. So I don't have reflection issues and that kind of stuff going on. But in the spare rooms, no. You know, I'm going to put something lower so that you can see. Here's it. It's still a Sony TV. You know, now we're at $800, right? You know, because it's 60 inches or 65 or whatever.
Right.
But for $800, you can get a rocking TV. But when I walk into this other room, you could tell it's a lot better. And that's why you're paying $2,000 difference or whatever it is, right?
I can't wait to come out. I got to subscribe. I got to come out.
You have an open invite.
And I'd have an empty wallet.
I know. You know, like I said, I won't charge you to come out. You can
go. No. I'm talking and be like, oh, no, it's,
you know, we'll go. We'll do a track day.
Oh, that's a whole other podcast.
I know.
We talked about that before. That's one of
the things I want to talk about too, DJ, is like, yeah, let's talk about cars. Let's talk about alcohol. Let's talk about, you know, these different, you know, everybody's got some little, again, you can call them vices. You can call them hobbies. Well, you can call whatever you want to talk about.
But that's my takeover Tuesday. That's when I have my listeners on, like you said, Joe came on, and it's the idea is that we talk whatever you want to talk about. Yeah. And it's like, we go on tangents. I've had people asking me how to raise kids. I've had like, cause my kids are all older, married out of the house. And it's like, you know, just fun. Cause we are more than our theaters and it's, you know, and it's like, we could talk cars whenever you want. It's like, Dan, the guy that came over here, he loves cars, and I have my car in the garage, and he's like, oh, I'd kill myself. You'd be fine.
I know. But, it's the same. So when I was growing up, you know, family in the snap, we had a garage, although I think at that point my car was still parked outside because it was worth $500, right? You know, my first cars and this and that. But for the last 20 years in our house, because again, smaller, you know, Bay Area living, it's often like this. There's a one car garage, which is filled with stuff because there's no other place to store things, right? So through my time and through my cars, and you know, again, I've got some fun cars, and they've always been parked outside. I've literally never had a garage.
You just car you know? Cover them.
Yeah, I'll put a car cover on, but I like to actually drive.
I did too.
So then I don't put them on because I don't want to take them on and off all the time. And, you know, now I don't drive as much because working from home, doing different stuff. So I don't need to, right?
Right.
But in this new house, it's got a four car garage. And so there's a two car side by side, right? Like a classic. So my wife, and my daughter, that's theirs. That's the main garage, technically the bigger of the garages. But next to it is a single tandem. Right. So, you know, it's a single door tandem.
Single door.
So for two, and that is my garage. And it is, I was looking through it the other day. I'm going through it. My problem is it's just same as you're going to have like, what rooms do I work on first? Right. Cause I'm like, you know, it's got to be the theater because this is what I do for a living. And I'm trying to, you know, help design and create content. But I'm going to be building content off this garage because I want to show like this is how you do it. And it'll be a real garage, not to the level as you. I don't wrench quite the same way that, you know, as you do stuff on there and work on it. But I love working on my car, playing with
the
car, figuring out you know, what we're going to do and getting them ready for track days. And, you know, I'm at a point I got to get rid of a couple cars now because I bought, found a tremendous deal, DJ. I had to get it. So again, I hate because then I feel usually I don't talk about this stuff because you feel like you're, you know.
Yeah. No.
So So I found a guy had an auction. He had to get rid of it. So it's a 2014 911 turbo.
You told me about this last time. You wanted one.
I had a GTS.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
So I
but you were telling me about that before.
Oh, did we have it? Okay.
Well, so no. But you were telling me you wanted the 911. Yes. Yeah.
You know, whatever you buy, you always want the next one up, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So,
and again, awesome. I track it a fair amount, you know, and I daily it, you know, so these are not babied cars. These are, you know, but I take care of them. But you know what I mean? You know, when I watch guys that are like, yeah.
Is it set up for road or track?
So it's a little bit of both because I do daily it.
Oh, okay.
But you know, so it's not stripped out. It's not emptied out. It's, you know, but it's, I mean, it's a track beast. The thing runs and it's, you know, these things run like literally you just make sure the oil's changed, make sure that, you know, tire pressure's right. And these things will, you know, run a couple hundred thousand miles on them, you know, and so there's a good group of us, about 10 to 12 of us that probably 8 of the 10 or 12. Run Boxsters or Caymans or, you know, something in the Porsche family.
Yep.
So like I said, so I was fortunate. I had a GTS, which I love, which I need to get rid of still because I keep finding something new before I sell the other one.
That's you and I talked, that's how I get in trouble.
And I can't. And then we've been busy with the house stuff. And I, you know, before it was like, well, interest rates are so low and this and that, you know, I'll keep it. It's not really matter. You know, I've got a 2017 Vette Grand Sport. So, you know, again, great car, but they hold their values. The Porsches, they hold their values, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, you know, it's whether I sell it today or 6 months from now is only the heartache of me like trying to budget. Right. And so, but this guy had to get rid of it and it's done in a PPF. So, you know, so they'll put the covering. So it's like a wrap, but it's more protective. Right. But so most guys do them. They're usually like a clear gloss, so you can still see the paint underneath it. Well, this car was black, you know, a standard, you know, gloss black. But the PPF is exactly what I had wanted to do on my white one, which it's a Stealth. I think it's Stealth PPF. So it's a black matte PPF. So it's not clear. It has its own color, and it's matte, which I love matte cars. I think it starts from like old primered cars. Like I always loved primer gray, you know, cars. It's, right?
The clear coat is called the clear coat I use when I'm painting them. It's called hot rod because that's what they used to do on hot rods. Because you can them.
It was
the flat black, but it's called hot rod. It's so amazing to paint it because it goes on glossy and you just have to trust. And as it dries, it just dulls right out. And I've done some, my wife's cousin's motorcycle in it, and it was like an army green, and he wanted stickers on it.
Yeah.
He wanted me, all he did, he goes, can you put these stickers on for me? And it was like that, you know, the jaws on the planes that they'd have, like the teeth look like a shark. Yep. And I go, stickers, give me that. So I buried the whole thing in the clear coat. I did the whole, and I did all the design for him, and he was like, oh my God. And I used that matte finish. And it is. It's amazing. Amazing finish.
I love it. Like a matte black and a matte olive green, right? You know, military green.
Yeah.
Like, those are my favorites, right? There's a couple Challengers I've seen and even a couple Porsches that are in that, like, just a deep matte green.
Yeah.
And they just look phenomenal, you know? And so this one came, the guy had the whole car PPF. So it's perfect for taking it on the track because you're not, you know, you're always getting little rock chips.
You're not getting stone chips or anything.
Yeah. So it's this matte black and he's got some carbon in it. I got a few more carbon pieces that I got to add because I love adding carbon.
On a Harley. You got to add carbon to your car.
There you go.
Yeah.
And carbon on a Porsche. So the guy was getting rid of it and he put it up on auction and the auction ended on a Thursday at 1 PM. I'm like, dude, people are working. Like who? So it was, way under, like, you know, 25, 30 grand under what I know this car was valued at. And so it was a big spend, but I'm like, how do you not do this? And so I bid and I won. I was under the reserve, but then I bumped it up a little bit more. But I was still so far under that I had to do it. But, you know, and I'm like, but unfortunately, it's not like when you go to a dealership and buy and you trade in your car, because I would have done that. Now it's like, okay. But the money you have it, and then I'm like running around back and forth. I'm like, I got to get my car detailed, get it ready to sell. So, you know, so the main point being, if you want to buy a 911 GTS, DJ, I got one to sell, or a 27 Sport.
Yeah. No,
but it's so, but then you see your garage filled with them and it looks so beautiful. And I'm like,
Oh yeah.
It's like giving up your babies, man. Which one do you give away? Right. I'm like, you know, the Vette is this beast of a front engine, right? You know, I mean, it's just, it sounds louder. It's got a ton of torque to it. It's just, it's a different beast. And when you drive it on track, you know, you're front heavy, right? You know, so you're driving it fast. You're punching the gas, you're hammering the brakes because you got a nose dive.
You got to get that nose into the corner. Yep.
And then you pick up like my GTS, you know, still had, you know, about the same horsepower, but about, you know, 430 horsepower and, you know, 380 in torque. So it feels like it's less, but I can put that thing around the track faster because, you know, it's that rear
it's engine. Balanced better. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's a little shorter. It's a little lighter. It's a rear engine. And so, you know, and it just hugs those corners. I had to teach myself to really trust the car that I could go faster. I was used to brake harder. And then I'm watching, but you know, that was fun of going with some friends that drove, even if they were less powered, but similar cars, right? Driving Boxers and Caymans, because I'd watch the brake lights, right? And I'm like, well, if you're not braking, I shouldn't have to brake, you know? And so I
started watching
them, and I'm like, really? I want to be on the brakes, but no, sure enough, I take the corner with them and I'm able to do it. But then you start going, you know what? You know, most of the time you're not going that fast, right? You can pull a G and a quarter at like 40 miles an hour because you're, you know, ripping around a corner. But when you'd get in the straightaways, I'd be like, no, man, I'm flooring it down and I'm getting beat by a Vette or a turbo or something with, you know, 600 horsepower on the straight. And so I found this turbo and I'm like, oh, and now it's crazy. I mean, you're doing a buck 50, you know, like that, you know, and yet the thing still just balances in the corners, and it's all wheel drive, which is different. I've never driven one, but it's all wheel steering as well. So the rear tire actually turn like 30 degrees, right? And so now I'm even able to, you know, hammer those corners even faster. So, you know, while the GTS is maybe a little bit more pure, and I loved it because it was a 2016, so it was last of the naturally aspirated, no turbos on it. You know, this new, it's an older car. It's a 2014 versus a 16. I'm getting older.
You know, more tech. Yeah. It's like you've got more tech.
More tech in it, you know, and it's like, you know, I get it. Like everything else, you know, is it the pure driving? Is it this? Is it that? But I'm like, but it's just a blast to do. You know, I'm not driving for a living. You know, I'm driving to have fun, right? You know, and so it's a blast. And I've got Thunder Hill, which is right up about an hour and a half north of me. And I've got Sonoma, which is south. And Laguna's usually been my home track in the past when I was in San Mateo. But, you know, you go up there and Thunder Hill has this, it's a 3-mile track and a 2-mile track. So they'll run, like a lot of times they'll do like bike events on the 2-mile while people are doing the 3-mile. And then they've also got a skid pad and everything. And they've got an off-road track. Really cool place because it's out in the middle of nowhere. So they just have a ton of stuff. And so... but on every once in a while, they combine the two tracks. So there's basically a junction between the two. So it's a 5-mile track, which is forever long. Like it takes you 4.5 minutes to go, you know, get around this track, a little less than that, I guess. But as you're learning it and the rest, and it's like, I mean, 5 miles, like you're just, cause you're always thinking in turns, right? Like how many more turns, and there's always another turn before you get to the straightaway.
It, for anybody that's never raced before, never driven like that, it's you got to do it to know to understand that it's. I mean, it's a workout.
It is,
like you said. It's like you're going, and it's just like people. What made me think of it is like if you've played chess or you've played anything like that, where you're trying to think of your next move, especially if you're on a track with other people, I have to think of what they're going to do. But like you said, what turns are coming up? Because when I come out of this turn, you're thinking of all of those things all the while you're trying to do everything as fast as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only thing I can equate it to is I remember the first time I boxed against somebody and you all think it's fun, but then I'm trying to think, okay, when he drops his hand, what am I going to, but you're about to be hit.
Yeah.
So you're like, you can think all you want, but then you get hit and next thing you know, you're on the floor. So it's the same thing in a car is like, you're going around and it's like, I got to do that. Oh, corner. Yeah. It's so much fun, but it's, you get out, you're sweating, you're tired, you're, you know.
Yeah, no, your arms, you're stiffened up, right? Cause you're paying attention and, you know, and it's muscle memory. Yeah. My wife will, you know, you were driving for the day. Like, what were you doing? Right. And you're only on 20 minutes at a time.
Yeah. It wasn't cruise control.
You know, I'm like, if I put this thing into the wall, that's an expensive piece, you know, insurance.
Do you remember the first time you did over 100?
I mean, over 100 would have been probably, yes, I was probably
over 150. 18. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So I've done over 150. First time, I was probably 18, 19 the first time I did over 100 because my first cars couldn't even do that.
Right.
You know, governors and everything else in there. So first time was probably in a Mitsubishi Eclipse, my little convertible.
There you go. Yeah. I love those things.
And I think that governed out at like 110. So I know I've taken that, you know, up to there.
I had a friend in college. Yeah. We were in school for art and she wasn't the best art student, but she was very wealthy. Her family was wealthy and she had a brand new Mustang GT. And she's like, I'll let you take it. All right, let's go. I'm like, and she goes, no, you can just take it for the week if I do a project. So she, because she lived on campus, I lived in town. In the town. So I didn't live there.
Yeah.
She's like, just take it. And I used to go down the highway. I mean, I beat the snot out of that thing. And it was same thing. It's like, you know, my buddy had a Camaro before that. So I was probably like 16, 15. And I was doing on a back road. I was doing 95 miles an hour and I coming up to an, and he's going slow down. And it turns at a T. Okay. So it's like, there's no other side of the road.
It's an
intersection. We hit the intersection. I turned it sideways. I'm skidding through the intersection sideways and I drop it, put it in, you know, try to put it into first to pull myself out and go. And it popped out. So I never hit it. And then we hit the curb on the other side and the car went up sideways. Uh-huh. I'm looking down the hill. The car came down and landed fine on all fours.
Yeah.
But I knew I was screwed right away because this is his car. And the car's on the curb. Like the curb is like through the middle of the car. Okay. The car wasn't leaning. I knocked the wheels right off the bottom of the car and went up.
Oh.
The cop comes up. So we start walking to my parents' house, which was like a mile away, and the cops show up. So we turn around and walk back and the cruisers are there and they're looking around and they're measuring the skid marks and the skid marks go like this and then turn sideways, go through the intersection
and then disappear because the tires are gone.
No. And I'm 15 years old. I don't even have a license. I don't have a permit and it's his car. So he's saying, so they're giving him the ticket and they go, we gave you a ticket for speeding. And back then it was just a ticket for speeding. There was no, you know, it's a $50 ticket for speeding and a $50 ticket for failure to stop. And me, the dumb 15-year-old kid goes, I tried to stop. You can see the skid marks. Oh, the cop looks at me and goes, you tried to what? I was like, he tried to stop. I go, don't you get credit for trying? Look at, we slipped in the stand because there was a little sand there. And he goes,
trying to get it out of.
You got like 150 feet of skid marks here. You're lucky we're not arresting you for reckless driving. Yeah. I was like, okay, I'm 15. I'll shut up now.
Exactly. Take the ticket.
Yeah, exactly. But, and then I got to ride home with the cops. That was nice. They dropped me off. That was nice. But. Yeah, no, when you're doing those speeds, I remember the first time I did 100. I remember the first time I did 150 and when I hit 170 and it was that's the fastest I've gotten is like 170.
I tend to back off once I hit 150. I'd love to go past it, right? But and in the GTS, like you got to floor it and it takes time, right? I mean, you know, 450 horsepower, it just takes time to get there. It's quick, but it's not, you know. But in the turbo, like if you're doing, we're doing 80 and I'm driving up and I'm like, okay, dead open road, you know, fully straight, open it up. I mean, it's seconds and I was doing 150, but by the time I got to 150, Like, you just don't know what's going to happen, right? Cop shows up. You don't even have time to look at anything. Car comes up. If you ever blew a tire, you know, those tires, again, you're buying tires that are rated to go faster, Wiser Z's, you know, so I mean, you're, but still, you know, and I had a guy and I always remember it. I still like to go fast, but I was driving home one night, 2 o'clock in the morning. I was working at Good Guys. So, you know, so we're doing retail and, you know, every 6 months or so, you got to do a cycle count. Like, you got to count everything in the building and you have to count it all at once because you can't have another day where something gets sold and this and that. So you count through the day, you count through the night till you're done. And it's like every product in the store. So we're finally getting out. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning. I got a 45-minute drive to get back from like Walnut Creek where I was working to back to my house. And, you know, there's nobody on the road. So we're, you know, I'm driving, I'm moving. And there's a San Mateo Bridge, which is like, it's like 13 miles, this bridge, right? I mean, it's long. Yeah. You know, it takes a solid 9 minutes plus to get over the thing. And so, you know, we go through, I go through the toll. That's like back before the fast track or whatever day, you know, so like you had to stop, pay your toll. So I go off there, I move in, and there's this vet. And I'm probably 22, maybe at the time, maybe 22, 23. And so, and I'm in my Eclipse. Little four banger. I mean, not, yeah. You know, by all means, not a crazy fast car, but you know, anything goes quick. And so I'm going off and, you know, we get through the toll bridge and there's a vet, you know, so that comes off the toll bridge about at the same time. So we're going there. Nobody's on the road, you know? And so we both just kind of gun it, you know, and all of a sudden, I mean, we're doing over 100 on the bridge, you know, and there's some graceful turns, but it's not, you know, it's relative. Mm-hmm. And so we're, you know, we're going and like I said, I'm younger, car's not that fast. So I don't have radar. I don't have any of that kind of stuff on the car. I'm sure the vet does, you know? So, you know, we're going and we're neck and neck. Obviously he could beat me. There's no debate, but like, it's all it is how fast are you willing to go? Right.
Exactly. So, yeah.
You know, all the cars will get there. It's just, you know, how fast and
they don't all get there, but yeah, you know, I know the sports cars,
79 Mercury Capri. I don't think it went past 80, but, you know, but, you know, so we're going, well, so he kind of backs off. So I'm like, okay, you know, and I'm trying to get home. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm tired. So, you know, we're having some fun. It was, you know, it kind of wakes you up a little bit, but you know, I'm still going. Well, I see the car come back up. So I'm like, okay. So I'm continuing to go. Cause I'm like, oh, he wants to play around again. Let's, you know, so I'm still going and the car gets like, you know, pretty much like almost right in my blind spot. And I go, you know what? Wouldn't that suck? And sure enough, he rolls right up and you see the side light come on.
Oh no.
So he was sitting
in a vet.
No.
Because we have those out here.
I know. And sometimes, no, the vet had backed off, probably because but the cop was at the toll plaza and saw us take off, right?
Oh,
so
my
he
God.
Just came out. So the vet backed off, probably had radar and he knew and backed off. So the car's coming up, but there's nobody there. There's nobody behind us. I'm not, you know, thinking it's the vet again. Sure enough, it's the cop. So now I'm doing, you know, 50 the rest of the way. For like the next 3 minutes to get over the bridge, I pull over. Cop comes over, you know, and it's again, what are you going to do? Right. I'm not going to argue it. I mean, you know, you know, and so the guy comes out. I roll down my window and he goes, "You thought I was the vet, didn't you?"
Yep.
And I look because, you know, I'm still, you know, we're in that age where, you know, I know people that had far faster cars than me and this and that. So, you know, it's like, I know that they'll pull your car. You know, I mean, you can end up. Cuffs for, you know, 100 miles an hour. So, and I was well over. I was probably doing about 112 on it. And I go, "What vet?"
Yeah.
Because I don't want to get hit for racing, right? You know, there's
a difference.
Oh, yeah. And getting tapped for racing for over 100 on a bridge, right? And so the guy goes, obviously takes my, you know, grabs my license, grabs my, you know, registration, insurance. Comes back, you know, but I was, you know, again, I respect who's out there, you know, so it's like, you know, and again, I'm not going to BS them. I'm not going to argue with them. Totally respectful, you know, yes, officer, you know, and so he goes, he comes back and he goes, "Look, you know, I'm sorry," because he was pushing me hard and I was, you know, in the beginning, right? And I was being polite because I got it. I deserved it, I'm sure. You know, and so, you know, he goes, "Look, yeah, sorry, I was a little hard, but look, you're doing 100 miles an hour on a literally water on both sides. It's 2 o'clock in the morning and it's pitch black. You blow a tire at 100 miles an hour and you roll off that bridge into the water, you're dead.
Right.
There's nobody saving you. There's nobody this and that. You're dead. And he's not wrong. You know what I mean? And you just don't think about it in the moment and the this and the that. And that's one of the things. It was years later before I, you know, had a little expendable income to be able to race. But it was like, but that's one of the things that got me on there is, you know what? I don't need to weave in traffic. I don't need to, you know, always do. On occasion, like I said, you know, I want to see what the car will do. You open it up. But it's like, I don't need to be dumb in traffic around people where somebody could get hurt.
Right.
You know, and they're right. You know, it's like, you probably shouldn't be doing 100 miles an hour on a bridge where, you know, I'm like, and especially in those days, like that Eclipse did not have YZ rated tires, you know?
No. And that's what's funny is, like, I did a lot of the same stuff much before I was 19, 20 years old. And it's funny, I see kids now, and my son, you know, he goes off to college, comes home, and now he's working and everything. He's 25, 26 years old, but he's telling me about his friends that are building cars for this, but they're not talking track day. They're talking Fast and the Furious stuff. Yep. And I'm like, I told him, I'm like, and now he's not into that. He's into cars like I am, but he's into it like, look, I want a car that goes car. I want a car. I want a car that goes 0 to 60 like that, 0 to 100 like that, because I can do the off ramps. I can drive it every day. I can have fun with it. Just accelerate and then that just stay with traffic. Right. Yeah. They want to race on the streets. And I'm like, no. You don't understand. Like, you're 16. You get pulled over for doing that. Yeah. They take you home to your parents.
Yeah.
You do it at 24, 25, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
Your car's gone, especially nowadays. No, I mean, it's not like when we were kids. It's like, I mean, nowadays you're done.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because they're cracking down on all that. They don't want to see people do that stuff. So
people, I mean, you see so many things, even the guys, you know, we're always, you know, everybody loves the rag on the Mustang guys. Right. So you see them online because it's a great car with a ton of horsepower. That's reasonably priced, right?
Right?
So you get younger and younger drivers that are, you know, picking up these GTs and then upgrading them, or, you know, or even, you know, a 350 or a 500, or, you know, although those are getting expensive now, but, you know, but like you pick one up and it's like, you know, you could be pushing 500-600 horsepower and you watch them come out of these cars and coffees, spin and open and just spin in their wheels on a 90 degree turn, you know, they're going out. And I've watched, you watch all these.
They lose it.
Somebody will send it over to me. Ugh. And you just watch them do a 360 spin, not on purpose.
No, that's it. And they go right into another car. Yeah. And my God.
And I'm
my
like,
son.
Yeah. For what? Like you were pulling out. You didn't look cool. Yeah.
No.
You look like an idiot when you just totaled your car and somebody else's car.
Right.
You know.
Oh, yeah. And,
I don't get it. And I'll watch people that, especially, you know, in my cars because I daily them. So, you know, I'm putting them on the street and, you know, and it's in areas where somebody will roll up in a Challenger, a Mustang or something like that. And again, cars that I love. And I'm like, if I floor it, you have no business competing with me. You know, I'm going to pull off you, you know, like nothing, but I'm not going to.
Right. Because
we're on a street and, you know, at 100 yards up, there's another stoplight or a stop sign or, you know, and I don't want to, you know, you don't want to hurt somebody. You know, you see things all the time. Somebody just made a mistake, not trying, you know, hit somebody or kill somebody or passenger in their car. And it's a fine line. You know, like I said, I don't think either one of us both love cars. We're not going to spout, you know, oh, don't do the speed limit or, you know, but it's like, but I think, you know, there's got to be responsibility, right? You know, it's got to be.
Cars are dangerous because you don't know what you don't know. And like you said, you get a hold of it and you see the videos online and stuff of people in these and they just, like you said, they're trying to go straight through the intersection. Yeah. They end up taking a hard left into oncoming traffic, waiting to go for their turn at the light. Right. And you're like, my son's like, how did that happen? What happened? I go, people have no idea what it's like when the wheels let go.
Yep.
And then, you know, when you're not hooked up, and you just put all the power to it. Yep. The car doesn't know any better. And they don't know what it feels like when the back end drops down and it starts to go and they panic.
Yeah.
And they
turn into it instead of out of it. And they're turning out of it instead of into it.
Yeah. You know my favorite is they come off the gas too fast and then it snaps back around and goes back into somebody in the other direction. And you're like, what happened there, Dad? He's like, well, see, he let off the gas really fast. It hooked up and sent him in the direction he didn't want to go.
Exactly. And he had to really went that way. So it's going to go that way. And that's what I love, the idea of like track days and, you know, and a skid pad and, you know, opportunities in a relatively safe environment, because nobody rolls their car anymore. You know, I mean, you got to hit a curb. You got to do something to, you know, to actually pop cars nowadays, you know. And especially with the nannies and all the other stuff on them. But, you know, even if you take the nannies off, it's good to learn, like, yeah, what do you do when you lose traction, right? You
I
know,
took my kids out.
Spinning and I was doing 60 and, you know, or even coming off the line. Like you said, you're trying to go straight, but that car is fishtailing. And nobody's thinking it's going to do that, right? Why would it do that? You know, it's like my wheels are pointed straight. And it's like, nope, that's not how it works, you know?
Yeah. When both my kids were young, getting their license, I took them out in the winter.
Well,
and taught them in parking lots.
The same thing.
Parking lots and everything. And just here, lose control and let it spin and see what happens. See how to get control of it again. And then you'll see how long of a skid is. You're doing 30, jack on the brakes, see what happens. And you do all the extreme stuff. I took, to get my license for motorcycle, you take the course. I took the course out here. And it's a lot like any racing course. They actually put you through any of the worst stuff. Yeah. Hit the brakes, do this to learn how to bail, not jump off the bike, but turn it to the side. But you do the same thing in racing. And you go to the extremes, lose control, get the car to skid out to the side so that, one, you know what it feels like, and two, you know how to recover from it. Yep. And the best way to do that, for us, for normal people, is do it in some inclement, like a snowy area, so that you can, in an open space. And we took them up to the high school parking lot and we're just like, wee, like showing them how to do it. And they were like, oh, you know, they were scared at first.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I want you to be scared now. It's when you're on the road, I want you to understand this is what can happen, because you don't want to learn about that the first time.
No, first time on the road.
In the snow, when you're like, yeah.
Yep. No, exactly right. You know, I had a buddy of mine who did, so he's got a little boxer, one of the fastest drivers. I used to work with him at Good Guys. So like we knew each other from way back and then just kind of, you know, split off, you know, we knew each other and then it kind of, and when I got my first one, we're in, you know, again, now all these, you know, Facebook forums and this and that. And so we happened to be in the same forum and I posted, I was at Laguna Seca and he's like, dude, I was there.
Oh, geez.
And so we started catching up. And like I said, we've just got this great group of people in there. And I think we range from like 25 years old to probably 70, 68, 70 years old. So, I mean, you know, it's a wide gamut of people.
Yeah.
But we all love stuff and it's all low key people. So, you know, like everybody's chill and so, but he just did the Porsche experience with a friend of his down in Southern California. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think there's one there and one in Atlanta. And so it was his second time doing it. And so he was down there. And so they've got a big track, right? So you can really put these cars out to their paces. And then there's a like low friction where it's like polished concrete. And there's a section where they have water. And there's a section where they have like a kick plate. So it like you pop and you lose control. And he told the guy, so you can kind of do different things. And, you know, they run you around all the different stuff. And he goes, you know what? I track my car all the time. I've been on this track before. The track is great. I love, you know, the experience of going around a track is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And that's what most people want. He goes, I just want to, you know, I think you get like 2 hours, right? You know, so it's like, I just want to spend my time on the low friction area, right? You know, I just want to learn, you know, the drifting side of it and the this and that. It's control, right? Because those are the things that are going to help you when you are on a track and this and that. And, you know, running a track again, you know, is always fun, but it's like, nah, you know, how often do you get an opportunity to play in these areas where you're going to lose control? And, you know, you just keep going through like this low friction area. You watch the cars the first time and they're like all over the place and they stop because everybody, they hammer the brakes, right? And then they're skidding and then finally they get the car to stop and they're in the wrong direction or whatever else.
Yeah.
And the goal is when you get in there and you lose control that you're never supposed to stop. You make it to the end, right? So you regain your control, right? And your composure on the car. And so you watch these guys and it's like second, third, fourth time in, they're finally making it through. But it just takes those, you know, it's just, you got to do it a couple times, you know? And so he's just like, no, that's all I want to work on is low friction stuff and stuff that's going to get me so that I can re-pick up my traction and, you know, and take control of the car.
it really makes you feel like you're part of the car.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you really do, because you're bracing yourself in the car. It's like, I mean, a lot of people, that's why the cockpit's designed the way it is. Yeah, oh, your knees go to a certain place.
Yeah. I end up with bruises on my knees in there. I gotta,
But you feel like you're part of the car. And it's like you and when you make it through, it's like, that's why you'll see guys, they'll tap the dashboard. Good job. Good job. Because we did it together.
We did it together.
We did it together. You know? And it's like, oh, it's so much fun. It's so oh my God. It's now you get, now I'm like, all right.
Now we're ready to go, DJ. Come on out. You come out. Well, that's, I got to say, what time do we start? We're getting
2:22. We're taking a little bit off, but
But So what I love about, where we've kind of moved up, we've got all this, space out here, right? It's not country, but it's like, we're up in the hills. There's this great park down the way. We're like 5 minutes from the American River. So like people grab, you just grab inner tubes and like go down there and people are just going down the river and it's a blast. We're 40 minutes from the Rubicon Trail, which is what like the Jeep Rubicons and, are named after. Yeah. So my cousin and I are going, he picked up a Jeep, a couple years ago, but we're going. So they do an event. Jeep does this Jamboree event where, we're riding the Rubicon Trail. And so it's like a two and a half day event. You go out there and you camp and you do all this. So like, and it's 40 minutes away from my house, so it's like, he's going to come pick me up and we're going to go up there for a couple days. So I love the idea, especially like you said, as we get older, right? Cause we always want to talk about, someday. But they don't all have to be expensive trips. Like, I've done Europe. I've done this stuff. It's fun. I used to go a lot for work. And so I think that's great for broadening horizons, but there's so much cool stuff to do here, in the US, in any portion of the US. Mm. And so it's like, I love doing the track stuff, but the off-road and stuff's fun too. Hey, take a three-man little canoe or a raft, and you take it down the American River and it's just a relaxing day out in the sun. And, there's always the college kids are playing out, they're all drinking it, it gets to be, it's as fun as you want it to be. Right. And so I love it for that kind of stuff. Cause it's like, as we get there, as we work harder, as we're doing all these jobs, it's important to be able to unwind. And obviously home theater is one of those. I love to just kick back, watch a movie. There's nothing better than doing that in my mind, but you do have to have those other hobbies, right? It's good to, do different things, meet the different people in those different groups. Like I said, I've got my car guys that aren't necessarily my home theater guys, not necessarily the off-road guys, and I think it's important because we get so locked up at work and then coming home and family and all those things that are most important to us. But sometimes we've got to have that time to, kind of blow off steam and have a little bit of our own hobbies. And like we said before, I wish they were cheaper hobbies.
I know. It's like, my son's doing the off-road thing. He's got a Toyota Tacoma, my old Tacoma. And he's doing all the off-road stuff. So he wants to do those long trips that, you convert them into campers and stuff. So he's doing that. As much as I've been into multiple things my whole life, home theater always being one of them. It's only been like the last probably, I think 10 years, 12 years of I've really kind of settled on home theater because it was when the kids were, we were very focused on them, so we didn't get to do anything. Yeah, so it was a lot easier just to and I didn't even do a lot with it. It's not like I had to upgrade a lot because once, especially back then, 10, 12 years ago, 4K wasn't out yet. You were at, 720, 1080, whatever. There wasn't a lot of tech being changed, so there was a pretty substantial amount of time in there where it was like, upgrades were very limited. It's not like today. I think today we're getting, the tech hasn't changed. It's kind of evolved a little bit, and like the 4K is coming down in prices. The quality of the image is getting better, especially from the projector perspective. And we're getting into more and more like tone mapping and stuff for all the displays that are able to. So I think that's where the upgrades are coming from. So there's more money to be spent. Whereas I don't know. Do you think that about like 15 years ago, there wasn't a lot to change. If you had a good system, what were you really going to do?
Oh, I mean, I remember my, you know, my first system growing up, obviously, you know, was hand-me-downs from, you know, my family, my parents, right?
Frankensteins, so, yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I remember having an old Marantz receiver that I wish I had kept just for the, you know, it's like at the time, you know, but it was from the 70s, right? And, you know, and you know, these cheap, like, you know, QA speakers and, you know, I mean, it was just like big, you know, box and, you know, wood grills and all that kind of stuff. And, but it sounded great in my bedroom. You know, I mean, that was, you know, and it got me into the bug with a VCR and then a DVD player, you know, and so, yeah, you know, I think that stuff just lasted longer because there was less tech, right? You know, what was really coming in? I remember, you know, that was two channel, right? That was all you really needed and had, and, you know, even Laserdisc and all, you know, it was still two channel, you know, you know, and starting to get obviously into five and then, you know, and then, yeah, the first 5.1 receivers. But at that time you could buy like, you still can, but like little Polk, you know, and like, you know, just little, everything was shrinking down, right? People weren't buying as many, like the big tower speakers and things like that, unless you were really going all out. So satellites were starting to come in, right? Soundbars weren't really a thing yet, but you had these little, you know, 5.1 with a little center channel and little satellites and,
home and a little subwoofer.
Yeah. So, I mean, I remember picking up my first one of that probably for $500 and, you know, gave me 5.1 and little Sony receiver for, you know, probably used or, you know, for again, another couple $100. And, I think, you know, even my first when, you know, so let's say within the last 20 years when moved into our house, you know, we were still running component, you know, I had video switchers that were composite. And my first been, you know, my first, like, I remember Key Digital video switchers that were, you know, like I said, component video. And then, you know, DV came in for a quick moment before HDMI, and then it was, you know, and but it's like, yeah, all of a sudden you had to, you want HD? Well, now you got to get into HDMI. Now you got to get into, you know, and then the receiver started changing faster, right? Because you went from ProLogic and Dolby Digital, right? You know, and then and now you've got Atmos, and you know, so I think it's moved faster, which on one hand is great because it's becoming more involved, right, and more engaging. You know, object based, like you can do with, you know, with any of the, you know, new surrounds, you know, I think is great. You know, on one hand, it's like, yeah, you could do, you had height channels before, you know, you had, you know, so I mean, those things existed, but not to the level of detail that they are now. You know, they were just blending speakers, right? And so, you know, TVs, I remember having a, you know, a 720p plasma. You know, I had a commercial version of Pioneer Elite that I had bought that I think we sold or I had. Yeah. When I was kind of running my own spot in between things long ago. And so I bought one and, you know, you would still put in a Key Digital video card into it, you know, because so that you could upgrade the quality of it. Right. You know, so it had a scaler in it, basically. Right. So, you know, a 720, but it had a scaler. That thing had a beautiful picture in it. You know, and I remember keeping that thing for years and, you know, and I keep it because newer stuff was coming out, but it still worked and didn't have the expendable money to, you know, to just get rid of a TV. And then finally it was like, okay, now it's time to get a 4K TV, you know, 8 years later and, you know, and the thing still worked. And finally I remember, you know, gave one to my in-laws and gave one, you know, it was just like, you know, they were beasts of TVs. Now you see TVs. I've been pretty fortunate. I haven't had any go out on. But it's like, you know, people have TVs that don't last 3-5 years, you know, but they're cheaper. But they're cheaper because people want it to be cheaper. But the other side of the coin is that they don't last as long, right? You know, they don't last.
And it's I've said that to people, like when they're buying a television or something, like if you're buying a cheap television, don't worry about it because you're probably going to want to upgrade the tech eventually anyways, whether the tech improves or your vision of what you're seeing improves. So, and it's, I think like what you were just saying to get back into market maker, you're like, education is so much more important now. It's like you and I learned trial and error when things weren't evolving very fast. Sure. So we have that as a foundation and it's like, so that enables us anything new that comes in. You're like, oh yeah, this is similar to what we had 25 years ago or something. Sure. Oh, like I've seen this like this. So we know the pitfalls before they even happen. But if you're fairly new at this, it's changing. You might have learned something, and now it's changed so much. It's harder to see around the corner because you don't know what the past was. And education is so important right now but learning what you need to learn. That's what I try to tell people is like, what do you want to know? What do you want to get out of this? And like you said earlier, it's like, just, you know, enjoy what you want to enjoy and build off of that. But that's how you need to learn. And it's like, you can't be listening to just like the forums and the people online, because
everybody's in different places. There's no context to anything half the time, right? No. The amount of times where I see somebody, what do you guys think about this speaker? Well, I guess that depends. Where are you putting it? What's the size of the room? It's, you know, this speaker versus this speaker, you know, and that's where, again, to your point, education becomes so important. Context becomes so important. Understanding the difference between the two. Why am I spending more money for this product versus this product? Like I said, you know, when you're looking at TVs, it's like, you know, what do I need to spend on this? You know, and the marketing messages come out there. People get confused. It's, you know, it's like getting into like 8K TVs, and not to start down another rabbit hole and stuff, but it's like, you know, 8K TV comes out. Well, it's like, there's no real content for it. Now, at some point there was no 4K content, right? You know, so it's like, but the issue becomes programming always takes longer because they spend so much money on these big broadcast cameras that they don't want to spend more money. Now, there's red cam stuff that is out there in 8K. And the stuff that you see that, even when it's down converted to 4, looks phenomenal. You know, but it's far and few between. You know, so when people are like, well, do I buy an 8K TV? All it's doing is scaling. So if that scaler isn't great, so a cheap TV that's 8K is not going to look as good as a good TV that's 4K, because that scaler is not doing justice to what it's supposed to do, right? It's just, it's interpolating and adding, you know, pixels. But that's where I sit there and I watch, and it's just like, well, yeah, no, you know, I understand, like you said, I understand the value from buying old, you know, Key Digital scalers in the back, that there's quality, otherwise don't bother, you know? And so, you know, I think you sit there and it's like, well, if it's something like in my mind, room design, so acoustics, room design, speakers and amplifiers, I will spend more money on, because in my mind, those are the things that last the most. Room.
Right.
If you build a room right, you'll never have to touch it, right? You can put in new speakers, do whatever else. You tweak the things a little bit, but a good sounding room is a good sounding room for whatever you put in. Yep. Spend the money there. You know, speakers, again, if you're buying good quality speakers, 10, 15, 20 years, you know, at some point there's some degradation when people are like, oh yeah, I listened to these from the 80s. I'm like, dude, there's no way that they sound as good as something new. But we all hear what we hear, right? So, and speakers are very subjective. So it's like, buy the best that you enjoy at that price, because it's going to last you a long time. Right. Amplifiers, especially if you move away from the AVR, you know, all in one and into and amps, buy a good amplifier, because you're never going to need more, you know, unless you're stuck buying low, right? You know, but it's like, if you invest in a good amplifier and you're getting even 100 watts of clean power, you know, good quality power, is so much better than a 300 watts of, you know, only two channels driven at 8, driven at 4 ohms when your speakers aren't 4. And, you know, they put so much marketing into that information. Oh, this is 150 watts. Well, no, it's not. It's 60 watts. So, and all you need is 20 in your room, you know, of clean power, right? And so I watch people that are just looking for that speed and feed, that spec. And it's like, is that what I need to do? But buy a good amplifier and it's going to last you, because the amplifier, other than if it goes bad, but they have better warranties and they have other stuff. And sometimes they can be repaired. Good amps, good equipment, like a car, can always be repaired. And so cheap amps just get tossed and you buy new ones and it's a waste, you know, but processors, things change all the time now, right? You know, I mean, it's tough now. Companies, and this is, you know, Trinov, Storm, there's a lot of good companies out there, Audio Control, that are making it so you can upgrade the cards, right? So you kind of have a, you know, you've got a processor, but you can update the HDMI to 2.0, you can update, you know, so there are manufacturers that are obviously charging more, but you're getting more out of it, you know, that's
right. They're future proofing themselves a little bit more, so because they have to. You spend that kind of money, you want to be able to.
Then you're still going to spend $2,000 on the upgraded card. You know, software updates are free most of the time. hardware updates or not, right? So,
right.
But it's quality. And so that's there. But, you know, I'm like, yeah, if you're going to replace a processor every 3 to 5 years or 5 years, you know, more or less, do you need to spend as much? You know, if I have a good amp, then I just need it to decode. You know, it's not doing heavy legwork. It's right. just decoding. You know, I need the right amount of HDMI inputs and outputs. And, you know, that's mainly it, you know, and then same thing with the TV. Yes, I'm all for OLEDs and, you know, looking based on your room, do I control my lighting? Do I have reflective lighting? Do I, you know, reflection from, you know, a lot of sunlight or windows? Those are going to change what I buy. Or, you know, is it worth it to buy a laser projector? Well, the fact it costs more, but it costs a lot less now than it used to. You know, you're getting to a point now where for, you know, $6,000-$10,000+, you can get a good laser projector. And you don't have to worry about bulbs. You know, people right. are buying bulbs and it's like, you know, you only get half the time before it's, you know, most of the way dead.
Right.
You know, so even if you have bulb life, it's still, you know, it's only running 80% or 70% brightness. So, you know, they're like, oh yeah, you get 400 hours out of it, but really at 200 hours, you got to replace it. Because otherwise you're getting noticeably degraded performance.
Right.
Those are the kinds of things that I'm like, yeah, if you're going to spend and do the higher end, it'll last a lot longer. If you're buying lower, then you might as well buy lower because you're probably going to replace it in 3 to 5 years. And just like you said, I'm going to enjoy it. It's better than what I had before. I'm going to learn probably more about the hobby. And my next purchase, I'm going to realize I need to spend a little bit more for
it. Well, you know where your money went. As opposed to if you just did it right up front, you'd be like, I don't know what the difference is, but I know I got the best.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but and don't if you got the money,
bless you and go for it, right?
But
you know, but I'm like, yeah, for most of us that are working hard for it, it's like, yeah, you know, I want to spend the money where I know I'm going to get it for the longest period of time. And the things that are shorter term,
right?
I might buy in the middle or I might, you know, again, I'm going to look at it to see how important is this, right? You know, and in my mind, you know, in most of those situations, I would put money into acoustics and room design before I put money into any of those, you know, speakers, amplifiers, or, you know, or displays. They're not as sexy. Everybody's like, oh, I got a bigger TV or I got a, you know, a bigger speaker. But the reality is, you know, and I've said this for years, you know, I could take a mid-level speaker from a B&W or a CAF or, you know, pick your brand, and I can make that mid-level sound far better than the upper level that costs three times more based on the room. You know, because, you know, direct sound, you're barely hearing it. You know, it's something like less than 20% of what you're hearing is direct sound. Everything else is reflected. So if you're not controlling those reflections, it's never going to sound as good, you know? And again, that's why I love lately, because I've been chatting so much, like I said, with Anthony Grimani, and we, you know, it's always, we're just talking about acoustics and room design and calibrations. And I love it because it gets me back into that space of like, you know, yeah. You know, this is important stuff. And the more we can educate people so they understand that,
right.
Maybe you don't have to spend as much money on speakers. You know, in my mind, it's not about, oh, well, put acoustics in so I can charge you for something else. And it's not me doing it, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's about spend the money there so that maybe I can actually spend a little bit less money overall. Mm-hmm. And I'm not constantly in that feed of upgrading. Because what's usually happening is I buy the speakers, but I'm like, you know, they didn't sound as good as they sounded in that room that I heard them in. Well, that's because that room was treated.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that I get into that all the time over here is people are amazed that I watch everything at reference level movies. Oh. That is right. And they're like, I can't do that. It's too loud in my room. It's too, I don't know how you do that. I'm like, cause it's not that loud.
Yeah.
It's like when the room's treated, right.
And if
you're not at reference level, then you're not getting everything that they intended, because there's certain frequencies they're trying to get to you and they'll only play at a certain volume level.
Yeah. So it requires more power as you go lower in frequency.
If you lower it down, you're lowering everything down. And it's like, but with the room treatments, it just like you said, you're taking away those reflected sounds, and people don't understand how much the room, like, cause when you calibrate your system, like say you run just like Odyssey EQ or something, and you get that, and it does a boink, 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 boink. Well, that's just sending it. And the microphone goes, it took it this long to get here. And then it says, okay, we got a little bit, but it's basing the room off of that direct sound as much as it can. Right. after that, it goes, okay, we can play this loud. But then when you go to play a scene, it's going to play at that volume, but it's not taking into account all the reflected sound that you're being inundated with around the room. I mean, that's why you get that. It's too loud. I can't do too much. When you treat the room, all of a sudden, all you're getting is that direct sound for the most part. Now you're getting that environment of like, oh my God, it's like when I had Dan over last week, we were having a conversation at reference level during an action scene. I mean, you have to say like, hey, what did you think of this? It's not like you're like, this hurts. I mean, it's a real experience. It's like, it's not painful. It's not anything like that. But it's not the speakers. It's not the amplification. It's not the processing. It's the room. Yeah. It's the treatments. And so many people skip on that.
No, it's always interesting, and I see it, and people can do whatever they want, but the amount of people that I've seen, again, they've got great Bowers & Wilkins speakers, they've spent a ton of money on speakers, and the speakers are great. Again, it's not a good or bad on it, but I'm like, you didn't treat the room, and you're just getting all this reflection. It's harsh because you're hearing all these reflections coming off. And really what it comes down to is, because you have all these strong reflections, but they're coming in delayed, right? Because the direct is coming straight at you, and that's only one narrow band, and everything else is coming in reflected. You hear these delays, and now your brain's working overtime trying to figure out the sound, right? It's muddying it up, and it's fractions. So you think you're only hearing it directly from the speaker, but really it's coming in all around. But there's so many distortions to it that are still so strong that, now your brain's working overtime. And that's where you get what's called listening fatigue, right? People all the time, no, it's this speaker. I don't like this speaker because it gives me listening fatigue. And it's like, no, that speaker in that room is giving you listening fatigue. But if the room was done right, it actually sounds really good. And now it's louder. It's more efficient. It all just goes based on, I can make any of those speakers sound good, but having a horn or having a wider dispersion isn't necessarily bad. It's just bad if the room's not treated to accommodate it. But no matter what, you're always going to get all this reflected sound. But if you can break it up, now it's still coming to you, but it's enveloping you, and it's a lot softer because it's losing energy as it's, hitting a diffraction panel or it's getting absorbed
The direct sound is the priority. It's easier for your brain to translate because the direct sound is the most
of what you hear. And so now your brain kind of goes, okay, this is the sound. I can disregard this. And that's what you want, and that has nothing to do with the quality, generally speaking, with the quality of the speaker. It does have to do with dispersion of the speaker and different things like that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, quality of a speaker or an extra woofer is not changing that. it's really just coming into what frequency is going to play, how wide is the dispersion. That's really equating to, sweet spots, right? How wide can I make my sweet spot? So it's not just one seat. And then how can I make it so that it's, what like Floyd Toole and Grimani uses a lot is sound power. Sound power is the total power of the direct and the reflective sound in the room of what you're hearing.
Okay.
But, sound power is how clean it sounds at that level, versus just distortion and what you're hearing. And so many products are just being tested with a microphone a foot off the speaker, where you're only getting direct sound and you're only get, and it's just like, it's not the same experience once you get in the house. And that's why people oftentimes, you were asking before about how many people, percentage of people with, theaters and such. That's why so many people, they put a theater in their first house, and they may not put it in their next house because they realize, they may be into movies and stuff like that, but they realize they spent a fair amount of money on that first house and aren't getting the use out of it, right? Because they don't enjoy it because it's loud or it's complicated or, whatever of 100 reasons, the rest of the family's not using it. So then the person who wanted it's not in there, or
that's a shame.
or they find it's too bright or it's too this or it's too that. The bulbs keep dimming down, so they don't want to keep spending money on, having to replace it. And so, or they're afraid to use it because, it's like a car, right? When I watch these guys that buy these cars, they have them for 10 years and they put like 1,000 miles on them. the car's not appreciating,
No.
It's going down unless you own, you know, a Ferrari LaFerrari. Yeah. You know, yeah. If you own an exotic, fine. But it's like, you know, these guys that are buying these vets that are babying them and putting it, like, I understand taking care of them, but it's like they never drive them.
I'm going to baby my vet. Guaranteed. Yeah. I'm going to baby my vet. It's a show car. When I get one, it'll be, you know, the new C8's mid engine. When they came out with that, you and I talked about it a while ago, but, I'm baby. That's a show car. That's what I want to do with it. I've done all the other stuff. Yeah. I've done that. And it's like, track day, it's like, you got to clean the car. You got to do it. No. And it's like, I've done all that and I've done it in cars faster than.
Yeah, then what that one's gonna be.
So I'm like, I'm older. I'm like, I'm done shifting. Now we're back on cars again magically. I'm done shifting. I want the new paddle.
Yeah, I want a paddle shifter, no doubt.
So that my wife and I can go drive down the Cape for the weekend and take the vet and just be like, put the luggage in the front under the hood.
It does not hold a whole lot. I had a C8 maybe 2 months ago when I went to the Lollapalooza event. So I stayed. I got lucky. My dad lives out in Arizona. And so I stayed with him because the place was like 20 minutes away. So I'm like, rather than staying in the hotel that was like $300 a night, I'm like, I'm just going to get a fun car. So I rented a C8 and it was great. Yeah. Rented it on Turo. So like, you know, again, somebody had it, beautiful car. But I remember having just a mid-sized piece of luggage, right? So not an overnight bag. I was there for like a week.
Wasn't a convertible, was it?
No. So it was a hard top. So it has but the back barely fits a set of golf clubs in it. And the front.
Yeah, you could put that little with the sunroof go or the moonroof slides in there, but you could fit a piece in there.
But with a medium sized piece of luggage, because I was there for about a week, and then I had some work stuff that was with me. I had to put it in the front seat. I could not get it. You know, it would not. Nothing besides an overnight bag will fit in that.
Should have taped it to the roof.
That's right. I'm sure they would love it. Here's a picture for the owner of me. You know,
it's a rental.
Sitting out. Oh, I just lifted the hood.
Yeah.
No bungee cord. Keep it down. Yeah.
Drive down the highway with your arm out.
it's a blast of a car though. But you know, my thing is, you don't have, you can baby it and you don't have to put it on the track. You don't have to run the hell out of it. But I'm like, they're meant to be driven. If they're going to depreciate, put some miles on it. You know, when it's like 1,000 miles on a 10-year car, I'm like,
no,
you just
broken it in
3 grand for nothing.
Right.
You know, like go rent one. You know, at that point, you can rent one for, you know, $400, $600, $1,000 a day if you're doing it like in a Hertz, like an official kind of spot versus the Turo.
There's a place out here that does it. My wife got it for me a couple of years ago with the C7. The 8s weren't out yet. And we rented a car for the day.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I think it was like $400-$500 for the day.
Right.
So, and they have monitors on them and stuff. Yeah, and like being a car, because people rent them and they're not car guys.
Yeah.
And they're just like, I mean, one guy, the owner, we ended up, you know, I like to talk. So I meet these people and next thing you know, he's telling me his whole business story. One guy took it to a track once and they got monitors on it. If you go over, I think it was $5,000 on the RPM for longer than 10 seconds, the car shuts down. And it's like, now what's funny is I'm going down the highway. Like we're doing some areas with it. And I'm like, my wife's like, you got to slow down. I go, hon, we're only at $4,000. Like I got room to play because they're so powerful. You just go.
I tell the guys, but before I bought my C7, I rented one. Right. So have you seen Turo before? Is that a thing? Okay. So Turo, so it's T-U-R-O. So at some point we're going to wrap up here, but
yeah, whatever.
Right. But we might as well.
You didn't know you were in the 24-hour podcast.
That's right. Yeah. Or at least we'll reuse it for that one and then we'll be good.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So Turo is a rental company, but think of like you've got Uber now, you've got all these companies, right? That basically don't have their own product. They're selling a service of somebody else's product, right? You get an Uber, somebody else's car. There's no Uber cars, right? So this one, people rent their cars. So people will buy a car that, you know, maybe is slightly out of their price range, right? It's a Porsche, it's a Ferrari, but a lot of times it's whatever. And then they rent them out. And okay, yeah. So there's a, basically there's a split with the company Turo because that's where you go. But if you look up any city, so if you looked in Turo and you looked up Boston and you looked in your area, you'll see a list of probably a couple hundred cars varying from a $30 a day, you know, a little car to get around in. Like if you don't have a car, a lot of guys here, like San Francisco, you know, they just need a car one day to get somewhere, you know, go shopping, go do whatever they're doing. So yeah. Like $30 car. So you can find like these little Chevys and little stuff like that, but you can find Ferraris on there. You can find C8s on there, C7s. And they're usually less than what you'd pay at like Hertz in their performance series or, you know, stuff like that.
Wow.
They're people's cars. So you kind of, you know, but there is insurance. There's things like that they have on there. And so usually they're car people. You know, I'm sure the guy renting the $30 one, that's just a business or they're trying to cover the, but you know, for a lot of these guys, they'll buy a car that's slightly above, you know, where they would if it was theirs because they rent it out 40% of the time and they rent it out 10 days a month, you know, or 5 days a month or whatever else. And that helps to pay for their, you know, for their payment, right? Or their insurance or their whatever else. It's an interesting way. I've looked at it. I've got a buddy of mine, who's done it and now has probably 6-8 cars now. And so he keeps buying these fun little, you know, little Boxsters and Caymans and, you know, and an SUV and a this and that.
Yeah.
You know, he pulls $100-$200 every day. He rents one out and you get to drive a better car. And, you know, if you're not, you know, if you're not going to drive them that much, then you just rent them out. Or, you know, if I'm going to different places. So like, that's what I did in Arizona. And I think that's awesome. I only paid like $160-$180 a day. You know, now it was a 1LT, right? So one trim, but I didn't care. I just wanted to drive the car, right? You know, and so, you know, it's a C8. You know, nobody's paying attention to the trim on the inside. And so the guy bought it so that he could rent it out, but still play around with it. And it pays his payment. So basically he gets to drive the car for free. You know, he keeps it for a few years and then he'll trade it in for something else. And, you know, and as long as, you know, you got to run the risk that when you sell it, you know, might have an accident on it now. Somebody scratched it. Somebody did whatever. But insurance covers that stuff. So you have to look at it not as your baby. You have to look at it as I wouldn't own this otherwise. Right.
This is what I do, though. That's what I do is that scratch where I take care of all.
Yeah, no doubt. Right.
And so I'm like, ooh, maybe I could do something like that.
That'd well, you know, fun. Yeah. Right? Frankly, from that perspective, otherwise you should be looking at helping some of the people that are doing this. You know, you
can. That's what I'm thinking while you're talking, buddy. I'm like, ooh,
and now you're making even more money because now you're making money off of them, and you buy a car that you make money, or it's free, and you're doing your own repairs for free. So, but yeah, I mean, it's a fun way of looking at it. You know,
yeah.
You know, people aren't always going to get rich on it, but some people have built a good business. They've got a little fleet of cars. You know, you got to clean up the car every time beforehand. You got to, you know, so there's a lot of legwork.
That's what I like to do anyways.
But yeah. That's the thing, right? You know, so, yeah. But if you got another full-time job, it's tough because you got to
get
the car over to them or they got to come to your place or you get, you know, so you got to figure stuff
out
logistics wise. But I remember I had my Panamera. I rented it out when I first bought my vet. And I rented out the Panamera a couple times and I had a guy, you know, they rented it for like 5 days and I got $1,000 out of it. And, you know, I'm like, you know, that covers 6 months of my, you know, insurance on the car. Right. You know? And so, and it came back fine and, you know, I rented it one or two other times and then I didn't really, like I said, I probably more apt to rent than to rent out. Just cause I always feel like I'm busy and I don't have time to manage it properly. But before I bought my C7, I was looking to figure out what I wanted. And so I rented one on there, you know, and it was like, you know, on the luxury cars or exotics, usually they'll put like 100-mile limit on it, right? For a day, mm-hmm. you know, so 100 miles for a day, you can buy more miles or whatever else. But I'm like, 100 miles is plenty, right? I mean, I just want to get a feel for the car, you know, rented it, blew 100 miles in like 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And then the car just sat there. But I'm like, took it down to Santa Cruz, took it back, you know, took it through the winding hills and ended up buying one. But it's a great way to play with a car before you buy it. Because more, you know, you go to Hertz and it's like, it's the same five cars. You go to, you know, Enterprise and it's the same five cars. It's whatever, brand they use, right? You know, I'm a Chevy or I'm a Ford or Turo, like almost anything you want to find, you can find. You know, you want to drive a Challenger tomorrow? You can drive a Challenger. You want a Vette? You want a Tesla? You want a, you know, whatever it is. You want a Mustang GT? You want a C7, a C8, you know, you know, almost anything's on there. And so I think it's a great place for a couple hundred bucks, especially when we're talking about more expensive cars, right? Figure out what you want, because there's nothing worse than buying a car and then you realize, oh, it's too loud, the ride's too rough, but you know,
right.
So, you know, I think it's a great play for that. And now I use that when I travel to go visit clients or do something else, like I did in Arizona and I've done it in Dallas. I'm like, yeah, why not roll up in a fun car? You know, if I got to drive around for days, then, you know, for about the same amount of money as you're going to pay for a little four-door, you know, whatever at Hertz, you know, I can, you know, for $20 more a day, I can roll around in a C8.
Oh,
when it's just me, myself, and I, and I don't have all this luggage, and I don't, you know,
right?
Yeah, why not? You know,
Turo.
Check it out. We'll talk about that next time.
Yeah, we talked about.
I think it would work well for you, actually. You know, because that is what you do, and you know,
it is what I do. Exactly. I met
guys. There's guys that have built a good business off of photographing cars. Because like anything else, you're looking at all the cars. You have good photos.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that somebody wants
my wife's cousin car. Does that. He takes pictures of the car. He's from Australia, and he has a Holden. He actually has two Holdens now. He has his first car that he had when he was a kid. He had it, his dad shipped it over here for him, but he's all, you know, show cars. But that's what he does. He's a photographer and takes pictures of cars and
love it.
I mean, there's lots out there.
Oh, but yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be a good idea.
Guys that are like, yeah, they're just known because somebody tells them you're chatting. You know, I'm chatting with these guys, the guy that I rent the C7 from. At the same time, I rented a Jaguar. So he had both of them. This kid was 22 years old, right? Couldn't have, you know, no real money. You know, I had a little bit here, you know, obviously, but just bought the cars and it was making the payment on them plus a little bit of money. And that was what he did. Right. And so, but he was driving a Jag S series. You know, so the convertible, you know, in an S. So, and he was driving a C7, you know, again, basic, you know, base level, or a Z51 or something like that. But it was like, but fun cars, you know? And so I was chatting with him and he's like, oh yeah, this is a great photographer. And, you know, you go and you check it out and he's doing all these cars for Turo because then everybody kind of starts checking each other out and this and that and chatting.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that those guys would love to have somebody that does bumper work. And, you know, that's usually what happens.
Yeah.
You know, little scratches, you know, some bumper work and things like that. You know, these guys aren't crashing cars. They're just, you know, little.
No, it's all cosmetic.
Yeah.
I mean, anything that have, you know, bad would go to a body shop, but if it's cosmetic and I can come out, fix it, that's insane. I know you don't even lose the car. You just go fix it.
I would bet that, you know, that would be a good area, man. Definitely check it out. You know?
Yes. I will. Then,
you know, even for you, like I said, you know, you like cars, having one out there, if you got it's just a little bit of time to detail and make sure that they're ready to go when somebody wants it logistically.
That's what I do.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you're like, yeah, here you go. You know, and you get to drive something that's a little bit, you know, a little bit more fun, little something that if somebody's paying the note for you, you know, you don't mind driving, right? Or paying 80% for you, you know, then it's like, you know, that's not a bad deal. And you know, you run it for 3 years and, you know, there's a little bit of risk that somebody totals it, but that's what, you know, there's insurance for that.
But that's insurance.
Yeah. You got it, you know, but so, yeah. So anyway,
that's cool.
We've run a ton of topics here.
Oh yeah. So, have you done any plumbing? No, I'm just kidding. We haven't touched on toilets.
That's right. Actually, I gotta re plumb some of the ones here. I
couldn't even think of a subject that you and I wouldn't go off on a tangent.
Yeah, that somebody had some. Yeah,
it's not possible. Brett, thank you. That's the only way we can end these things is by literally but by the way, do not hang up when we say bye. Don't leave right away because we still have to download the other side. Okay. Yeah. I don't want to lose this great conversation. I've had that. Like, oh, man. This is awesome. I can't believe it is definitely not going to be this long between conversations.
Yes.
Again.
Yes. Well, I definitely will not. If you're doing lighting, we have to talk about all the things that you're putting in.
And your site, when that,
I expect it to go live August 1.
I expect to be the first subscriber.
No doubt.
There you go. So
I will get you on there. Please. We will have a conversation with it. I would love to, you know, to be able to shout it out to your subscribers at that time. Cause
yeah.
There's a lot of stuff. We'll talk home theaters. You know, we'll be talking with manufacturers of the, you know, of the brands that, you know, these guys love. But we'll also be talking about other stuff, you know, lighting and general audio and, you know, indoor outdoor lighting and all that kind of stuff that, that I think is just good. We'll talk cars. I want to talk alcohol. I want to talk watches. I want, you know, all the potential vices that we have, right?
There's there always, you go. So, I'll bring my watch box down.
No doubt.
So, buddy,
I think it'll be fun. This
is brutal.
I'd love to have you on there. Once I get started, I'd love to return the favors in there and get you on there. I always love chatting with you. You know, and again, you've got a great group of people because I've always, and same thing I've always told your listeners in the past. And I always get some emails and phone calls afterwards, you know, and from,
oh, cool.
Yeah, I saw you on Brightside. You got some time to chat? Absolutely. So, I love your, you know, your listeners, your subscribers. As always, if anybody wants to reach out to me, again, it's not what I do for a living, but more than that, always happy to talk. Brett, so Brett at MRKTMKR.com. So Market Maker, no vowels. Whatever the new one is, I don't know what it's going to be titled yet. I'm trying to figure that out now, but I will share that for next time. I think it'll be great. And like I said, in the meantime, if anybody needs any help, has any questions, these are big expenses, no matter what level we're all at. You know, I just want to make sure that people buy the right thing that's, you know, good for them. And again, I'm happy to give recommendations of solid dealers that can be respected and, you know, and trusted in whatever area you were in, trusted brands, you know, all those kinds of things. So if anybody needs any help, you're always welcome to reach out or tell DJ and he can get a hold of me as well. But DJ, I always appreciate being on, man. It's always a blast. Let's definitely not make it be as long. And it sounds like let's call it in August. I mean, that's a month and a half.
You're definitely. Right? And CD is in. CD is in September.
Yeah. So. Well, we'll definitely have to prep for that. So if you're coming out to CEDIA, we will do some stuff. I know I've got some events going on. So we will have to catch up and do stuff together.
Yeah. We'll be talking frequently anyway. So but great. Thank you. Thanks, Brett. Really appreciate you jumping on. This was awesome as always. Everybody, we're just going to end it real quick. Please just go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.